What's poppin'? The Drew and Mike Show for Thursday. And the Thursday lineup, Trudy, Mark, Brendan, Zoobs in the house. And we're live on Facebook. We're excited today. Steve Gorman from the Black Crowes.
Black Crowes.
Who said that? Who said that?
Mr. T.
He's doing a show on Fox now, a radio show. It was a
Westwood One.
Westwood One, I'm sorry. He did a sports show on Fox.
He did, yes. This is a different one, just started.
Oh, wow. Trying to get all the radio jobs, huh?
Monday to Friday, 7 p.m. to midnight. If you're in Toledo. If you're in Toledo, 94.5 WXKR. Grand Rapids at WLAV.
It's in Grand Rapids and Toledo, not Detroit.
Westwood1.com.
No room for him here.
Facebook Live brought to you by Grow Green MI. They're hosting their... Oh, they just had their free growers night.
Bottom part of that. Isn't that bottom part of that read have?
Yes. Grow Green MI, the store where commercial growers choose to shop. They're not two stoners in a hydro store like the other guys. Rather, staff of over 40 experts ready to help you succeed. That's a lot of stoners in one store. Not just two stoners. 40 stoners. Whether you're just starting out growing at home or have a Class A facility, these guys can help with insane deals like bags of Ocean Forest for $10, Hortilux 1,000-watt bulbs for $55, and the lowest prices in the state on all the beneficial insects you need to keep your garden pest-free. The world's largest hydro store in M36 and Whitmore Lake, or online at growgreenmi.com. That's growgreenmi.com. Yeah, Whitmore Lake, that does seem like a good, great place for Grow Green.
Oh, yeah.
And, there's kind of a crazy day. We were all talking about Steve Gorman from the Black Crowes, and the book is Hard to Handle, The Life and Death of the Black Crowes, a memoir. And, oh, boy, I thought it was a really good book. I finished it, and I stayed up late. I couldn't stop reading it.
Really?
Good.
Yeah, and there were parts in this book, and I can't remember many books where I felt this way, where I really felt anxious because, as Steve points out, the Black Crowes self-destruct so often that something really good happens and you just kind of know.
Oh, it's not going to last.
Something's going to blow up. You know, this Jimmy Page tour. Oh, please don't ruin your relationship with Jimmy Page. Please. it's always just around the corner.
How did they ruin their relationship with Jimmy Page?
Well, I'll save that for Steve.
Okay. Whoa, teaser.
What a tease.
I know. It's pretty amazing, I got to say. Well, let me say this about the Black Crowes and Jimmy Page. Jimmy Page wanted to do a charity show in London. He had sat in with the Black Crowes once, and he had a great time. He'd shown up at their show with Robert Plant, who they also love.
What?
They love both of them. Steve says they're both super nice guys. They opened for Robert Plant in the early days. And then Page goes on stage with them. And then he's going to do this charity gig. And he suggests, well, you know, maybe the Black Crowes could – I could play with the Black Crowes and do a couple Zeppelin songs. And it went fantastic. It went so well that Jimmy said, I want to do some shows.
Oh, wow.
So they went out as Jimmy Page and the Black Crowes.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Put out the album.
Yeah,
too.
The Live of the Greek.
It's really good.
Remember that one. Fantastic. I got to say, Chris Robinson sounds
a lot like Plant.
He does.
Was that the basis for the movie then? Get him to the Greek?
Sure. I mean, not really, but yeah.
It would have almost fit. So then Page is having such a great time, and he just sounds like a really nice guy. You know, he's a star. There's a couple of weird things that happen, like they get a new bass player between legs in the road, and the bass player's a little, like, jabbery to Jimmy, and Jimmy's going, can you keep that guy away from me? I'm still Jimmy Page.
Get him out of here!
Well, there are people, they should know their boundaries, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think Steve even said, you know, he sensed that it wasn't going, that relationship wasn't going too well because this guy was
who I am?
A little too starstruck. But Page brought the Black Crowes were dead in the water. They could not fill a theater at that point.
Wow.
But this Page thing just blew up. Everyone in the industry wanted to see it. And the Live at the Greek sold, I think, over 500,000 copies. And it went gold in the U.S. So it was a pretty big record.
What year was this?
99-2000, I believe it went over the 2 years between the performance, the charity thing, and then the actual shows. And they added a full 55-show tour after it was just going to be, you know, it was like, oh, let's do some shows. And they did 6 shows, which were, you know, sold out immediately. People were so pumped because, you know, Page just hasn't been out doing that much stuff.
Right.
It was a few years after Page and Plant. So what happened, which is so interesting, the Crows had, their deal had moved from Rick Rubin's record company to Columbia. Somehow Columbia, through some, I'm not exactly sure how. That's all this show is, farts.
Farts, God, we'll never make it to JR.
It's a mashup. It's so normalized with me, it took me a while to realize that that wasn't part of the song.
I know, I did. It kind of went right through me, too. I would laugh if I listened back to it. But so anyway, Columbia, it's like, well, they're not our band. Rick Rubin signed them. We just inherited them with his roster. You know, they weren't really that crazy about it. And they made a record with a producer that the head of Columbia really liked, which was their way of kissing his ass a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But they did a couple, they just did stupid things all the time. They asked him for a track for the Armageddon soundtrack, which sold 20 million copies,
yeah,
by the way.
Big
and
one.
Said, nah, I don't think so.
What?
Yeah. And this is like the label head. Could they contribute a track to this? Nah.
Wow.
So they're going to let this record die or they're not going to put it out. And when the Page thing comes up, their deal has a, like a window where Columbia has to say yeah. Yay or nay.
Yep.
Well, the Page shows, the window passed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the window passed. So they were free agents, and all of a sudden they were in a new stratosphere.
Perfect.
Because of this Page thing.
Oh, wow.
So they were hugely in debt, hugely in debt to Jimmy Page. They got a 5-album deal with, I think it's V2. I think that has something to do with Branson.
Oh, Jimmy.
God, this is good, isn't it?
Jimmy, let's go.
So they went from literally no interest because their record sales had declined with virtually every album. The Shake Your Moneymaker did like 5 million. Southern
Comfort, Harmony, something.
Whatever that thing is. Great album. Did 2.5 million. Then the Amorica cover destroyed.
Oh, that's right.
They were out, not in Best Buy or Walmart.
Oh.
That was Chris Robinson, by the way. He had to have that cover. Yeah, they had to do that. Everyone said no. And he said yes.
Did he know who the girl was?
Yeah, who was that?
I mean, does he hop for her pubes? Is that what it was?
I think it was either a takeoff on, or it was the actual Hustler magazine 76 bicentennial picture.
How many people knew that?
Brilliant. Brilliant,
you know,
Chris.
It's so stupid. Everyone said no. He was the only one that wanted to do it. And so they did it.
Ugh.
And Amorica tanked. And then I think the next record did even worse.
It's pretty bad. When it tanked because of an album cover.
Well, on that album cover.
Gross, I'm not listening to this.
I was searching for the model of that, and I kept coming across, it was Hustler magazine originally. And there's a lot of speculation that that's actually a dude tucking his wiener.
What?
I'm serious. Oh. I read that. I read it like in a couple
places. It must be true.
I want the album even less.
But I can't find the model.
I didn't like that cover.
It was gross.
Maybe something visceral inside of you knew it was a dude with his wiener tucked.
Brandon, put the cover up for Facebook Live.
Look.
So people can see
if
they
look at
it
all the time. I mean, if once it was like, oh.
It's disgusting.
And plus, anybody goes to your record collection or your CD collection. Oh!
Yeah, I know. They have to chuck it.
So,
touches their hand. Whoa!
Anyway, due to the Jimmy Page thing,
yeah,
they got a 5 album.
Oh my God,
album.
It does look like a dude.
No, it doesn't. Find a smaller picture of it.
That's a hell of a bush if that's not a dude. Jeez.
Yeah, everyone thinks that they're tugging because it's a huge bush.
Anyway, they get this
Chris Robinson.
Because of the Page.
Congratulations on having a bush.
Jimmy Page lifting their
album.
Well, yeah, profile. The Live of the Greek, style. Their profile, yeah. Everything just was so raised, and it went so well, and they sounded great. They get this five-album deal, $1 million a record bonus, right. Which is, you know, for a band that was nice. Nowhere, it was pretty nice. They do one album, which I think it did okay. It was the Lion something.
Yeah, with the three lion heads.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called.
It's got a couple of pretty good songs on it. It's not their best album, but it did okay. And then Chris Robinson said, I'm going solo. See ya. I want more Bush. I'm out of here. Yeah, so they had four albums left at $1 million a piece. He goes, I'm going solo.
Ah, boy.
Yeah, so that was the end of that.
He just loves breaking things up, maybe.
He
maybe
does. That's
you're right.
He
self-destructive.
Can't, he's, yeah. Oh, God, the worst. The worst.
It ain't all about you, sweetheart.
I was trying to...
I forgot how great this album is.
He's...
Alive at the Greek.
Oh, it's just fantastic. I was just doing it last night.
It's actually on tour, I thought.
And, you know, I remembered interviewing Chris Robinson, and we were excited as hell about that. He said, I'm tired of singing about Lord of the Rings and gargoyles and... the.
Oh, that's what he said about Zap?
It's kind of what he said about...
You never sang Ramble On. That's not on the set list, is it? What are you talking about? Get out of here, Robin. Take your Bush and go.
I think he was...
Didn't something happen at DTE where he got hit with coins?
Yeah.
There's
pennies. People threw pennies at him all the time.
Wow. Yeah, and he had a shit fit. That's online.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. Hmm. We listened to it on the air. Yeah.
Recently?
Back in the Riff days?
Oh,
no.
Okay.
There's an incident in the book, too, where the same thing happens, and he leaps out into the crowd.
Oh, boy.
Why are people throwing pennies at Chris Robinson?
I don't know.
What was that about? Because did they just know? Were they trolls?
They wanted to give probably. Their 2 cents worth.
Maybe that's what it was.
No, it wasn't.
Is it Shake Your Money Maker? Or
don't humor me.
He's such a combative dick. I mean,
just to set him off.
He gets pissed at all the... yeah, and he didn't really shake his moneymaker much because after he saw the Grateful, he became a deadhead overnight.
Oh, jeez.
At one break, when the Black Rabbit went to a few dead shows, he's like, they just stand there and play. It's all about the music. So then he wants them to be a jam band. It's just,
wow.
He's just an awful, awful person.
Yeah, the worst. Hard to work with.
But there's a lot.
Hard to handle.
Hard to, very hard to handle. And Rich Robinson is no picnic either.
There was only a remedy.
How did Kate Hudson stay married to him for 6 years?
It's a real thorn in their pride.
That's a good question. It says a lot about Kate Hudson, doesn't it?
Yeah,
Kate
she Hudson. Sounded like a wonderfully dispositioned person. Like she seemed like she was really sunny and up, and they had a kid together.
Yeah, maybe he broke her.
Well, I want to read. I want to ask Steve about her because, first of all, he said the wedding was incredible. It was just the greatest affair. Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell, super nice. He just had a ball.
Huh.
And he said that Chris quit cocaine too because Kate wouldn't stand for it.
Sure.
Really?
So, but
how long did that last?
Until Kate and he broke up, I think.
Really?
Or probably before they broke up. That,
I loved her, but I didn't like her. I wasn't in love with her.
He wasn't very specific about that. I would love to ask, though, and find out if that had something to do with it, because he seemed like he was happy for a few minutes with Kate. Although Rich, his brother, you know, everything revolves around their fights. Rich came to the wedding. He was the best man, and Rich left the reception first. He was the first person to leave, and so Chris, of course, was upset about that all night.
God.
God.
I mean, don't bother having a good time at this ridiculously cool reception.
Yeah,
just
of
be mad
your own,
at Rich.
Your own wedding,
Wants to be mad.
What a baby.
I know, he is. Okay, so let's see. Hey, it's almost time to start this football bets. Should we call Spike King tomorrow? We should.
Yeah, why not?
He missed out on his legendary advice.
I have not been doing too well with my bookie account.
We could also, Brandon, by the way, I'm getting multiple emails about your lock that some people are saying it's a hamstring pull, and they're just saying day to day.
Whatever. He can miss 8 games, and he's still going to make this bet. You're welcome.
I love your confidence. I love your confidence.
He could lose his position, too. Somebody could come in and play well, and he could be benched.
What's Frank Gore?
I made you $32 last night.
What?
I bet against the Tigers.
Why? On my account?
Well, because, like I said, it was logged in. I mean... your account okay, needs action.
How about if I log in on your account and I just start using that?
Totally
you
fine.
Can use mine.
The balance is a little lower.
It's like a
of course.
Identity swap.
Oh, I see. And the balance being lower has nothing to do with you using my MyBookie account.
I think it no, it just depends on how much was in there when we started. You started with much more than I did.
Started, but I never made any bets. So it should be pretty close to where it was.
Yeah, but
how far off is it from where it started, Brandon?
I don't know.
Yes, you do.
Not that far. I mean, I don't know why we got to talk about it. Because all these.
I want to say it's
all
about
open bets.
About
that's why.
40% lower? Oh, no, you said you won last night, so maybe 35% lower?
I'd say about 40%, but the open bets cover all that. And then the winnings
oh, yeah,
from those
they're
open
locks.
Bets are gonna,
locks.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see.
You just
how many
can't
locks,
spend it yet.
How many locks are in there? Besides the running back with a hamstring injury.
Well, the Lions Super Bowl lock. I mean, that was a great bet.
I didn't say that was a lock. I said it was great odds.
Oh, boy. Well, you can bet on fantasy football. You can bet on regular football. You can bet on anything almost on mybookie.com. Game-winning touchdowns and two-minute drives. Running backs racing down the sidelines with no one to stop them. There's nothing else like the NFL, and there's no better way to make the games exciting, even more exciting, than to bet on them.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows that. Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet football this season, bet with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. You might even double your paycheck. No matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of the year. Join now, and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code Drew to activate the offer. That's promo code Drew, D-R-E-W, to activate the offer. MyBookie, visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. MyBookie.ag, promo code Drew.
I'm trying to win $600.
Oh, boy. There's a series of goofy stories. I'm not even sure which to start with today. Why don't we start with the Saturday Night Live guy that got booted?
Oh, yeah.
Because they were talking about this on David Spade last night, and we really haven't looked at Spade's show much. You know, it's a pretty good show. I haven't felt like I have to watch it.
Oh.
Yeah. Well.
I mean, I pop in on it once in a while, and I usually find myself laughing for a few minutes, and then I don't, I'm kind of bored with the multiple comedian format, I guess.
Really?
Well, it's not that I like, see, I'm bored with that format, but when he's in it with the kind of people he has on, I tend to, spend 10 minutes with.
I always like Colin Quinn had Tough Crowd. With
that was
comedians.
A good show.
Yeah.
But, Geraldo was on the show.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I mean, there were some great, great people on that show.
Spade had two of the best, at least two of my favorite right now.
Oh, no doubt.
Bill Burr.
I don't care what Bill Burr's on, I'll watch it.
Jim Jefferies, too. His show on Comedy Central is phenomenal.
Absolutely love Jim Jefferies.
I didn't even realize
that. When he came here and he wouldn't do an interview with us, I was crushed.
I know. We were kind of mad about that.
I did not know Bill Burr was on last night, or I would have watched it. I have it taped. I tape every show.
I thought this Shane Gillis story.
Bill!
I thought this story would be like 3 days and then done, and we'd forget about it. But it seems to be getting legs because there's a new story today about the hiring of him at SNL. The thinking is that Lorne Michaels wanted a comedian who would appeal to the conservative crowd because of all the perceived liberal comedy that's there.
Well,
so when he had his audition, usually they do characters, and this guy just did part of his stand-up routine.
I'm not sure how exactly it's going to work, because we all know that there's quite a process before anything gets to air on Saturday Night Live. How is this one guy going to make that much difference?
Wouldn't you think you'd hire him as a writer?
Yeah,
not
absolutely.
A performer?
No, definitely. It sounds like a... And, of course, he's out before he ever writes or does a thing.
And he's, he's still meeting with Yang, Andrew Yang. What's the point?
Is the guy really conservative? I mean, it sounds terrible.
No,
it's like, oh, of course the conservative guy is the complete racist joke guy.
Well, he was good enough to get hired. I mean...
It sounds like publicity to me.
Yeah, it does. It sounds
Doesn't it reek of some sort.
Yeah,
of
it has
publicity
a bad scent to it. But let's see what the guys on David Spade had to say about this last night. It is Bill Burr.
You heard about this? The monologue comedian Shane Gillis got hired as a new cast member of SNL. They immediately fired him about jokes he'd made in the past. As a former member of SNL, I feel my duty to stay out of the fray and let you guys comment.
Well, this is just cancel culture. The guy shouldn't have been fired. It's just a couple of things back in his history. We're going to go through everyone's history. or are we going to get rid of every sketch that SNL has done that involves race? Like, I remember John Belushi dressing as an Asian man with a samurai sword. That was the whole sketch. or maybe we could have red. What was it, Mike Myers, who used to play a Japanese host like this, and if they got the question wrong, they had to cut their hand off.
That was the one Farley was
and I remember nothing that
didn't speak
you did
Japanese.
Wrong.
Yeah. I was smart. Mine got cut at rehearsal.
Do they go back and also try to look at good things that the person might have done, or are they just looking for the bad stuff? Is it you just scroll through, help cat out of a tree? That's not it. Help grandmother walk across the street? That's not it. You know? I said something like... on a podcast. There it is.
Yeah. You know what?
I mean, you could do that. You could honestly do that to anybody. So I don't get it. And then I don't get if you say something like that, you can't work in a sketch show, but like it's okay from what? He can work at a lumber yard?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's certainly going to meet more Asians there, right? Then on SNL, it's a joke about how SNL's not hiring Asians. Jesus
yeah, but yeah,
Christ.
Also.
Now I'm in trouble?
Yeah.
We're not running for office. When is this going to end?
Yeah. Is it
millennials? You're a bunch of rats. All of you. Want to do is get people in trouble.
See, isn't the biggest story that this is the first Asian cast member they have? You know what I mean? Like 10 years, 11 years ago when I came to America, I asked to audition for SNL, and the response I got was, no, he's not American. Oh. So, you know, I know all us white people look the same to you. Yeah.
I think when I was younger on SNL, when you get hired, the first move wasn't to rifle through your past to make sure you get fired right away.
Right.
Because people, I heard the guy that won the Heisman, and then within an hour, someone's like, well, I went back 15 years, and guess what? He did something shitty. It's like, yeah, we all did.
I think they, if you go back 15 years in somebody's life, someone should then go back 15 years in your life, and then find
out.
I mean, you basically, hey, we went back and found out he's a human being. He f***ed up. So, I mean, I don't understand. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, it's, I tell you, it's pretty silly. As far as cancel culture, and there's some really strange terms right now, like that, this is such a weird time. I really feel like, I don't know if people like giving them, or they like getting them, or they like other people getting them, but I just see people lecturing all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like the Rup Raj thing, that was a lecture. I mean, the guy's trolling you. Yep. He's an asshole.
So
the girl with the high pants. I'm going to give a lecture instead of a news story here because
women
should not feel less than because they wear waist-high pants. Because one guy was he was trolling her.
The majority of her audience clearly thought the same as that guy. Give me a break.
Nice pants. Why do you wear them up to your tits?
And
everything is so otherwise cleaned up because of it. You're either in trouble or you're cleaning things up so much that nothing is funny, nothing is even edgy, it can't be offensive in any way, and it doesn't register.
You know what I really hate, among other things? I hate a lot of things. It seems like I hate almost everything. no, I really don't. It seems like our audience hates everything. Boy, remind me to stay off Facebook, please. Audience hates everything, I swear. There's nothing in the show that's universally loved.
I hate you! You're a failure as a person!
I can't imagine how we're having a successful show. I just can't even imagine it. With social media, it's impossible.
A lot of different things.
Oh, my God, they hate that, too? And just the conclusions people draw. But anyway, where was I going with this? Let's see. Among the things I hate...
You're going to lecture.
I know what bothers me is that when... Okay, how many times have we had where someone did something really good? You know, like the guy for Villanova in the championship basketball game, the Milwaukee Brewer reliever, and, oh, my God, there's racist tweets when he was 14. And what happens? It becomes a headline story. You know, if everyone didn't leap on these things and make them, you know, their lead story, would it really be a big deal if it just existed on Twitter or some dumb place like that?
No, I think we'd all go on with our lives and be fine, but
there's so much incentive, though.
So much.
But there's so much incentive for these trolls to just go through. And who digs through people's tweets for the last 10 years?
So easy to do. I know. I don't know who thinks of doing it. I will say, though, that Don't you think there's a difference between that and then this new hire, this Shane, what's his name? Not that I want him to be Gillis. Fired or anything. I feel like you have to preface it with that.
Shane Gillis?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I do think there's a difference.
There's a vast difference.
I thought what he did was
quite repetitive.
I thought it was quite stupid. Did you watch more of it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's plenty of examples.
I find him really annoying, honestly.
Kind of.
In fact, I was surprised he was hired because I didn't think he was that funny.
Well, I don't understand. How did they not know these existed? It just seems odd.
Well,
yeah, that's why it sounds like a publicity move.
I don't think it was a big podcast. It was somebody in somebody's secret show or something.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of it. I've never seen it on the comedy charts. So, I agree with you. I thought it was not I'm the same
plus
way.
They were
like,
fairly recent, not when he was 14. Yeah, what's the pitcher for the Brewers? Josh
Hader.
Hader, yeah.
Yeah, it was last year. It seems sloppy to me.
Yeah.
See, what they can do then is say, we fired the guy who was, being offensive, so aren't we good people?
And we're trying to hire a conservative.
We're trying to do something good.
To balance the show out. Because, the new guy controls the show all the time.
Of course. Gets all
guy,
the time.
The new guy doesn't do anything. The new guy can go the whole year without being in a skit.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't just make him a writer then. Just demote him.
They didn't intend to hire him in the first place. They were just causing a kerfuffle.
You think so?
I love that word, kerfuffle. Why do I like
that word?
You're
giving him too much credit.
It is that was officially a kerfuffle.
It was a kerfuffle.
I think my favorite story of the day, I don't know, it's close. There's a lot, because John Gosselin's broken his silence, too. That's a big deal.
Yeah, he has.
What are you looking at, Mark?
Oh, just checking out what Brandon's looking at.
Oh, Brandon. Was Brandon looking at some pornography?
Well, it's a news story, though.
Oh, I asked him to kind of check our Instagram account out.
Okay.
Because I thought the messages could be pretty funny, the comments.
I mean, it's a nice Instagram account.
Jessica.
Crystal is hard at work on high finance, but possibly away from her desk. Porn is coming soon. Crystal, get to your desk and turn it down. This is a Crystal porno alert.
Oh. Turn it down, Crystal. There's some porn coming. Hey, Crystal, heads up. Spill it.
So, Jessica James has passed at the age of 43.
Oh, no.
A superstar. She was good.
She was
a trooper.
What time? Because I want to know.
Trooper.
She's in the death triangle.
Take two wieners in her butt? Is that a trooper in porn?
She starred in The Porn Identity. And she also starred in Honey of the Year, whatever that is.
Is she in the Death Triangle, though, with Eddie
no,
Money?
No, Cokie Roberts squeezed in there.
Are you sure it's Cokie who got in
first?
We
just have two open with Cokie Roberts and Jessica James in one and Eddie Money and...
all four of them are probably having
Rico Cassick in the other.
Foursome up in heaven right now.
They're all swinging.
Are there some nice comments, Brandon, on her?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, you click on any of these ones because she's always half-nude and everybody's just... oh, you're so yummy. Everybody is. Oh, God, follow me back, please, fuck.
What does that do if she follows him?
Hey, will you fuck a fan? Seriously, that's what people write onto porn stars' walls.
Read some more.
Let's see.
Did you know she was in Celebrity Rehab House?
Sober House. Yeah. I don't remember her.
I don't either.
Wow.
That's a good picture. I bet that got some.
Oh, you're my sexy little goddess.
She was in Big Breast Nurses, number 5.
You look tasty.
Preferred 3 and 1 myself.
What about Big Tits at Work, 8?
I eat it. Oh.
This is a string of movies, Drew. These all begin with big. Big Breast Nurses, 5. Big Sexy Titties. Big Sloppy Asses. Big Tits at School, 8. Big Tits at Work, 8. Big Tits in Sports, 5. Big Tits in Sports, 9. Big Tits in Uniform, 6.
Wait, why is she in 5 and 9? Why isn't, if she was good in 5, wouldn't you think she'd make 6, 7, and 8?
She doesn't like to join the franchise until it's an established franchise. like the Rock. Because The Rock wasn't in the early Fast and Furious ones, was he?
No.
I don't think he was. Yeah, he had to wait till it was established.
The sexiest body in the entire universe.
She does not.
God, move your hand. Move your hand. She's covering up her nipple.
Stupid.
Like you can't see her nude. You're already online, and the guy can't find her nude. She was in Cum Swallowers and Cum Swallowers 3.
Okay.
Wow. I don't know.
She was a trooper.
She was young. I'd say it's probably not going to be something good.
Well, it's probably an overdose, right? She was in she was in Finger Frenzy.
August Ames committed suicide. We lost a lot of porn stars last year.
She was in Footman. She was in...
That's a dumb picture.
Dirty saying the name of this title, but I'm going to do it anyway. Fuck My MILF Pussy, Big Tit and Tattoo Edition.
That's a wordy title.
Yeah, it's too long.
Why is there a big tit?
It's too much to remember
edition?
To ask for, I mean, or even type. This would pop up.
The Hills Have Thighs.
That one's cool.
The Porn Identity was a pretty good one, too. Yeah. Looking for other fake names.
It's a good picture.
Oh, I need you to blow me.
Is that a real comment? Yeah.
Blow me and suck me. Weird.
Mel Gibson.
People are crazy. Wow. I don't know who would want to write something like that when they could just click your name and look at you, and call you out.
Well, just think of all the time that's wasted on all of these people on Instagram and writing comments and, Jimmy, oh my God,
I want to do so much to you.
Well, yeah, they're probably sitting on the shitter at work while they're writing it too.
I'll do anything to you.
Ooh, she was in Peter North's POV 23.
So erotically hot. Have a blessed weekend.
What?
Lusty. Yeah, that's this dude.
Everyone's so clever, they just want to say it in their own way.
That's this dude, Jack Steven. Yeah, like, she's going to bang you, Jack.
Yeah, good luck with
that. That's pretty cool.
Glad you spend your time so effectively.
She was in
efficiently.
She was in Sophisticated Sluts.
Oh.
Sounds like a fun one.
That's nice.
Superstar BJs.
Is that him?
Oh.
This is him.
She was in This Ain't Celebrity Apprentice.
What did this guy say, Brandon?
Oh,
I can't remember what it was. Yeah, it was something creepy, but he's a rocker through and through.
Tiddalicious 3. Turbo Sluts 2. Welcome to Peach Island. And she, then the final listing, wow, what a clit! With exclamation points.
Okay, my the story I was really pumped about, because I kind of called it, and I think...
Star that one for Wheels, by the way, Brandon.
I thought it was so stupid. But first, our original friends and original sponsor, Zach Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, launched their Jeep Adventure Days. And yeah, it's exciting. During Zach Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram's Jeep Adventure Days, you can finally get the brand new Jeep you've been yearning for. Like a limited, or leasing rather, a new 19 Jeep Compass Limited, as low as $166 a month. Or there's the loaded 19 Jeep Grand Cherokee, as low as $268 a month. People love the Jeeps. And they've got one of the largest Jeep inventories in the state, so that means lots of sweet Jeeps for you to choose from. Finally, we can't get through a Zach Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram ad without mentioning, Ram trucks. Lease a 19 Ram Crew Cab Bighorn Edition as low as $145 a month. And they've got an ass ton of Rams to choose from also. See details and their massive inventory at dealsinthed.com. Dr. Yaldo has supported the podcast for almost 2 years now, and that means a few things. He believes in us, and we've come through. Nearly 100 people have gotten life-changing surgery from him on our recommendation, either custom CATS LASIK, the most precise in the world, or what's called lens exchange for people 45-plus who can't stand the reading glasses. Eye surgery is generally a well-thought-out decision. It's important to go with the best and most experienced, and he is number one in Michigan. Over 30,000 LASIK and tens of thousands of lens exchange and cataract procedures. Dr. Yaldo does not lure you in with promises of low-cost LASIK. There's a lot of noise out there about low-priced LASIK, but then you go and find out what the real prices are. If you have shopped for it, Dr. Yaldo promises Drew and Mike listeners that he'll beat any LASIK offer you get. Get the best and pay the least. The evaluation is free. Call 800-398-EYES, 1-800-398-EYES, or go to the Yaldo Eye Center, YaldoEyeCenter.com. And do you have the frames and the sunglasses?
It's really interesting. The new Reed came over, and no mention of Dave and his fantastic eyes anymore.
Oh, I think Eli thinks he's not going to win that one.
I don't know. I think he's trying to make it go away.
He's trying to make that eye off go away.
He won't
pretty
see
clear.
It.
I'll see him tomorrow. I'll ask him about it.
Oh, he'll just deflect.
Yeah.
He'll just have Bob yell at you instead.
He knows about it. Yeah, he will. He'll have Bob get all frenzied about how stupid it is.
Yeah.
Act like he's not even involved. Okay, R. Kelly. We've almost forgotten about R. Kelly.
I know.
He was charged in Minneapolis. He didn't even make it to the hearing because Illinois wouldn't let him leave. So I think he was...
That's stupid!
I think they considered that he forfeited or he didn't have any plea at all. It was not good for R. Kelly. He didn't even have an attorney there.
Lie!
So... if we go way back, this is actually just a few months.
Oh, this is so great.
When he was first, or the second time, I believe, he was arrested in Illinois, and he's in jail, and it's like, he doesn't have any money. Oh, my God, this is terrible. R. Kelly.
So many people have been stealing my money.
It was just so dumb, the whole thing, the Gayle interview. And so this person goes, oh, well, he's a friend of mine, and I'm a big fan. I met him on a cruise.
Don't you think she's more a big fan than a friend
yes,
of hers?
Yes, she met him on a cruise.
Yeah.
She's not a friend. He would not urinate on her if she were on fire.
And if he was horny.
He wouldn't waste the urine.
You see, he's the only guy you can actually say that about where it's true. Wow.
So, you know, she presents herself as this, oh, well, we're friends, and I am a fan, too, and I met him on this cruise, you know, as if they're really good friends. So she puts up $100,000 of her money, mm-hmm. which, you know, is such a great idea to bail out this pedophile who urinates on underage girls, not to mention all the cult of underage girls, all this sickening stuff going on. I mean, just this is crazy because, of course, a pedophile, you know, who wants to urinate on a 14-year-old should be free until his trial. You always want them to be out as long as possible.
Use your common sense.
So anyway, it turns out her attorney was in court yesterday because, oh, no, she's not getting $100,000 back.
As predicted.
I know. Why is that so funny?
Because it was so obvious, obviously the worst bet we've ever seen.
I know. It turns out that you know, he's been running up all these court costs and various things that you have to sort of pay as you go. And when you don't pay, they just take it out of the bail.
How can I pay child support?
So her $100,000.
Six or seven business days to clear. Does that make sense?
Yes. Instead of being bail, it's being used to pay all his costs yep. related to course. So,
which is not what she signed up
for. The bottom line is, he owes her $100,000.
Yeah, I'm sure she's going to see it.
Good luck.
Yeah,
I'm sure she's first on his creditor list. Like, he would certainly pay her before he'd pay his own attorneys. Or
use your common sense.
He's look at his girlfriends in this penthouse in the Trump building in Chicago. Somebody's paying their rent.
If you were that judge, must have been so annoyed when she brought this up because it's bond. You sign that's what you sign it for.
And they explained it to the attorney.
Yeah, there's no case.
The attorney tried to suggest that. Yeah, but he's got all these other things since then. We didn't know about that.
It's your fault. It's not how it works.
It is your fault,
idiot.
That's right. You're guaranteed.
I flew in on a helicopter.
You might as well just say that.
You are promising certain things when you.
You're backing him.
Ugh.
What a moron.
I need somebody to help me not have a big heart. Because my heart is so big.
Did we ever figure out what business it was we called of hers?
It's Love on the Blue. It's a breakfast brunch place. Unfortunately, it's only open, you know, early.
Unfortunately, it's going to have to close because of R. Kelly.
Ha! So it closes at 3 p.m.
He took $100,000 of her money.
I just hate these people.
I feel honestly,
the fans are in a cult.
I don't feel bad for her. She should have known.
What is it with the? I swear, fans, they seem to have more worship than they've ever had before. The way they stand by people. I stand with Michael Jackson.
What about Paul McCartney? What if he did something? Would you stand by him?
No, I would not bail him out.
What?
Oh, if Paul McCartney blows his $1 billion.
I need some money.
You love my music.
No. No. Absolutely not.
I know. I can't think of anybody I would do that for either.
Oh, boy. So then.
Because what is she? What was she expecting to get out of it?
I have no idea. I guess she thought he'd come by and they could hang out for a while. And, you know. And she'd get her $100,000 back. It was just like money in the bank.
Yeah. I mean, with no interest, by the way. Nice bet.
I'm sure.
Dope.
I'm sure her husband's really happy about that. It was a good investment.
No, I bet you her husband's walking around going, I told you so.
Probably.
Not to do it. He's probably one of those guys that just grumbles really lowly a bunch of I told you so.
Oh,
I told you. What did I tell you? Didn't I tell you? Because I told you. Mm-hmm. And when did I tell you? A long time ago. And what did I say will happen when I told you? Exactly what just happened.
Lie.
Oh, boy. I said something upstairs, and Trudy regrettably laughed, and so I think I may be forced to say it again. And I think, Trudy, I think in your own way you were relating to what I was saying.
I was kind of on the same page.
I said that I was kind of Alex Trebek'd out.
Yeah, I'm with you. Actually, I don't want him to die. I'm with you, though.
I know. What I said was even worse than that.
What?
I said I was sick of his cancer. And, you know, I'm not.
Who's more sick of his cancer, him or you?
No, I didn't mean it like that. I just meant I feel like these shows are, you know, they're trying to. I hate it when they're trying to make us cry or they're trying to move us, and you know they're just going, "Oh my God, people are going to watch this."
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Okay. I'm drag just him in here somehow. Get him off the chemo table. Get him in here. Get a suit on him. Put a wig on him. Sit him down.
Get a suit on him.
I'm just saying.
I mean, am I the only one? Because, you know what? It's such a horrible story. He's such a good guy. I mean, he really is. He's not real interesting. I mean, it's the most
interesting. How dare you?
Sure he is.
Okay, interesting. Sorry.
He's got a hardware store in his.
Exactly, Brandon. I knew that story was
chased
sick.
Off somebody that was trying to rob him in a hotel.
And he was nude at the time.
Nude.
I think
he fights with Sean Connery. He's great.
I think this is the most interesting thing about Alex Trebek. This to me,
I'm just saying,
because he's actually demonstrated a little bit of emotion about how it makes him cry, and he was going through depression, and you know, I really feel bad for him. I really do. It's just that
I just don't want to hear it.
Well, could we just get regular updates?
Yeah. No, I know.
It's like 2 days in a row, Good Morning America had a long
Look at Good Morning America whoring that out.
Good Morning America also did like 50 minutes on Cokie Roberts, which. Sorry she died, but...
Oh, did you see Strahan struggle, too?
I did. Trudy and I were talking about it.
Disingenuous.
I don't think he has ever met her.
Cue it up to 7:18. I think that's around the time. 7:17. Be mindful that people have just given these lengthy tributes about how wonderful she is and what a great friend she is and great mother she is.
A mentor to many young women in Germany.
And she uplifted people. And honestly, I thought she was good. I did like her.
I did, too. Yeah.
I thought she was fair, which, you know, it seems like it's hard to say that about people.
Do you think it warrants as long of a eulogy as they gave her?
Pardon me?
You know, it's ABC, and that was her network, so.
What time on here?
It was 7:18 when Strahan is forced to make a comment, and I just don't think he knows what the hell to say.
Let's see. Okay.
Because everything's been said.
On you, Michael.
Such a great talent for breaking it all down and explaining it to people in a way they could hear, in a way they could
understand.
Everyone
has added something unique,
it came to her naturally,
way.
But she also worked very hard at it. And as everyone
said,
what an amazing friend and colleague.
Oh, and her family. Our families.
Shut up. Don't say anything.
Lifelong friends. We've known the family for forever. And a lot of people ask, how did she get the name Cokie? Where her little brother Tommy. Her name is, I had to write it down. Mary Martha Corinne Morrison Claiborne Boggs. And her little brother couldn't say Corinne. Could say Cokie. And
it certainly did stick.
And as Charlie said, as distinctive as her name, that was that woman.
Everyone says the same thing. You know, how much love and how much she, just how much of a trailblazer she was in so many ways, and how she made them feel.
Mm-hmm.
She made
a huge impact, and we're all going to miss her very much.
What would your hand?
He knows it. He can tell.
Carnival cruise ship.
He had nothing to add.
Wow, very well spoken and on point.
Yeah.
I think actually he bailed himself out as well as he ever has on that one because he had nothing to say.
Oh, no.
And you know what? I think he could have used that generic description
for anyone.
Any woman who died. Yes.
He was, his brain was a complete blank. Just a
Sorry
blank.
Sorry you died.
If you want to buzz ahead to 7:40, they had the 2020 story. The Phil Hartman story is on Thursday night.
Yeah, I can't wait.
And, you know, that's the one they did have clips of Andy Dick in there. Oh, it was almost 5 o'clock?
Yeah.
Okay. Are we calling Stever?
Yes.
Okay. Then I will mention, we'll come back to 2020 because that was an interesting little piece they ran. And I'm excited to see it because.
I love Phil.
I love Phil, too. I got very pissed watching the story.
It's so sad.
I know. It's so awful. Our friends and studio sponsors at Zot Ford and Holly are making it possible for you to go to dinner with us. Three lucky couples will get to enjoy a delicious Mexican feast with Drew and the podcast crew at Mesa Tacos and Tequila. Now, that's not actually the top of the copy, but I've moved it up
because hey,
I think
right.
it's of so much interest to so many people. How do you win? You must head to Zot Ford in Holly. Just take 75 up there, follow Jesus.
Yep.
And
very easy.
Drop your name in the car. Hat. Yeah, it's simple.
You didn't have fat lard, come get some dinner.
You don't have to buy a car.
No,
you
can
just head there and drop your name in the hat, and three lucky couples will be drawn at random. But if you buy or lease a new vehicle from Zot Ford during the contest, you will double your chances to win. So be sure to let the hottest sales staff in Oakland County know you are a listener so they can double your chance to win. And meanwhile, Zot Ford fall clearance event. They've got four new trucks and SUV models you can lease below $100 a month. That's why that should be the lead part of the copy, I guess. Yes, during Zot Ford's fall clearance event, you can lease a new 19 Ford EcoSport, an Escape, an Edge, an F-150, all below $100 a month. These are not watered-down rides, boys and girls. These bad boys are loaded with all the creature comforts you're looking for. See details in their massive inventory at dealsnetty.com. Fall Financial Hotline is opening, but we're just going to get through the Dr. Roche copy.
Yeah, you should tighten up for fall is the message at Dr. Roche's office. Leaves change and you should too. Undo the sun-soaked summer skin with BBL Face Tight. Active FX laser treatments, good for reversing age spots, wrinkles, fine lines. Morpheus 8, too, goes beneath the skin layers to shape and contour the face and body. And Dr. Roche, if you go to the DRROCHE.com website, you can see before and after knees. Oh, my God. It does a miraculous job of making your knees look more youthful, which you wouldn't think about until you see somebody's leg sticking out from under a dress. And without nylons, they can be gnarly. So it can fix that and neck and hands. And they have some specials. You should call them for a consultation, 248-338-1110. They do good work. And, make you look younger.
We need to talk to Greg and see if he is. There are people doing some kind of procedure to alleviate resting bitch face.
Oh, yeah.
See that?
Yeah.
How cool is that?
He has a lot to say about resting bitch face, too.
Oh, yeah. Does he?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to find out
exactly
more.
Exactly what it's all about and why your face assumes that.
Uh-huh.
Because they're bitches, right? No?
Not always.
Oh, okay. Be part of it.
I look bitchy, but...
I'm just kidding.
Sometimes it does all work. Yeah! Steve Gorman.
Hello.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, man.
It's Drew and Mark and Trudy, and I finished Hard to Handle last night. The book.
Speed reading.
That's honestly, Drew.
It took me like 4 days because it's a lot to take in, and I was telling everybody earlier that there were a couple parts of the book where I was really getting anxious. I was getting anxious. Hey,
you should have been there.
No, that's what I thought. It's called Hard to Handle, The Life and Death of the Black Crows, a memoir from Steve Gorman, who, by the way, is a radio guy himself, doing that show with our old friend Troy Hansen. Is Troy helpful? I hope.
Who?
Troy Hansen.
Troy. I guess he's not very helpful then.
I'm sorry to hear
that. Troy is the best. I worked with Troy doing a local sports show in Nashville years ago. He was my TD in 2011, 12, and 13.
Wow, Charles, he's left his mark all over the country, hasn't he?
And I met him. And in fact, when I walked into that station in 2011 to go, do sports talk, I walked into his office. And I was like, hey, I know you. You're that dude from Detroit.
That probably helped.
Yeah, I did, Steve. This is going to sound offensive, but I did not expect Troy. We knew he was a music director at WRAF. We were doing the morning show. And we knew Troy. He was a very present kind of guy. And he's got a good personality and all that. But I did not picture him becoming a muckety-muck in radio. He's like an executive type now. Isn't it?
He's muckety muck central, man. No question about it. Yeah, just counting beans.
Well, I thought it was really cool that you were doing a sports show, and one of the interesting things about that was, and I'd read this before I read the book, that everybody in the band and sort of in your orbit was real happy for you, but Chris Robinson never really congratulated you on that, and I thought it was kind of crappy.
Were you surprised?
Because by the time that all happened, believe me when I say, the least of my concerns. Mm-hmm. That was par for the course.
Yeah, I just thought, I mean, it just was a really cool development to get this second career going, you know, because you never know how these things are going to go. And boy, the Black Crowes. I swear, I've read a lot of these books, these rock and roll books, these bios. This book, well, Your Life and Mark Ford and Ed and well, Rich and Chris, because they're creating it. I've just never felt such a constant anxiety in a band. There's always a lot of ups and downs, and they're pretty dramatic. But, man, yeah. Oh, man, it just seemed like a really tough gig.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I'm to blame for that I stayed around as long. I mean, it's, and I brought my own baggage into the door when we started. I mean, it's you know, bands all, it's like a family. You establish a culture, and before too long, you forget that maybe it didn't have to be that way. It just seems like there's the old thing, like, does the fish know it's wet, you know, and does the band know it's dysfunctional? You know, and it's kind of like, and in our case, the answer is yes, but were we willing to ever do anything about it? The answer was no. You know, there was always lip service and always, yeah, okay, let's just, come on, guys, let's not do this to ourselves. We should be happier. We should be, you know, it's all just a lot of, you know, garbage talk at the end of the day. We just did things the way we did them, and it was impossible to ever turn that around in any meaningful way.
Did becoming more successful make it, did you think that it was going to make it better? Because obviously it didn't.
Well, I certainly did. I look back now and I laugh at myself. I'm the kind of guy who approached it like, wait, we sold how many records? This is good. You know, like, we should probably feel pretty good about where we are in life. And, you know, some of it's just pragmatic stuff. You know, I always had jobs. You know, I'm from a big family. I didn't take really anything for granted, and I never walked into this with a sense of entitlement. And I can't say the same for either of the Robinson brothers. They thought this was all preordained and destined, and they also didn't ever, you know, they had no idea what it was really like to have no prospects, to just go, how am I going to pay for my rent? You know, and just things that every person, I don't like the word normal, but sometimes just in the context versus guys in a band, it does apply. Normal things that people go through where you live and learn and get some life experience. I think they were both woefully under-equipped when our first record took off. They just had not had any of those experiences.
You know, I read the part in the book where you were asking for basically a point on normally, you know, with Lennon, McCartney, Jagger, Richards, Perry, Tyler, you know, they take the full publishing. And I've always thought, we all know it's true that, you know, well, surely George Harrison, surely Bill Wyman, surely Charlie Watts added, you know, a point or, you know, deserve a percentage or something small. And I wondered when you did ask for one point and they said, no, absolutely not, which, yeah. You know, and you weren't going to quit over it. But I wondered, do many bands do that? Do they give a couple points to the bass player and the guys don't write?
There's a lot of examples. It's like a quarterback giving his lineman a watch or a car. You know, there's a lot of those things that happen along the way for sure. They never happened in the Black Crowes. You know, and at the time, I mean, if someone hasn't read the book, you know, that came about because they were selling off a chunk of their publishing, which I was actually, I thought was a horrendous thing for them to do. But I was like, well, if you're doing this, and again, you know, my thinking at the time was publishing, the value of your publishing is completely direct line related to the value of your catalog. If you sell 5 million records, your publishing is worth a whole lot more than if you sell 50,000. And so, you know, building the band was something everybody contributed to with everything they had. And then those songs, I never asked for a piece of songwriting. It was a tip of the hat to the fact that every song was written with me in the room with them playing drums. And again, the context for those who haven't read the book, it was just a final litmus test for me. And it's insane to look back and think that I still thought I needed to make sure that I knew who they were. But it was just one of those, you know, when you're in something that you've put your heart and soul into, the hardest thing to admit is, oh shit, I went down, this wasn't worth it, or I've been had, or I've been kidding myself. It is harder to admit you've been kidding yourself than it is to kid yourself. And so that was sort of my final ditch. Okay, maybe they still recognize that this is something we all did. And the answer was, you know, it gave me such clarity. I wasn't upset about it. It was more just, a canary in the coal mine, and I got my answer and went on from there.
Well, it's interesting. A couple things. In 2005, when you guys came, when they came back, and you were really the last guy to get on board, they really wanted you back, and were beating the hell out of these other drummers. And in fact, you did come back, and you know, I was. It's hard to tell sometimes if you're glad you came back in the long haul or not. But I mean, it was.
Well,
just
I mean, I don't dedicate much of the book to that last half, not at all. 9 years. I mean, at that point, I did have to take in reader exhaustion into consideration. like, just change the names. All the same shit happened with some different dudes in the band. I think I say at the end, I don't know how else I would have done it. You know, I can't rewrite it. I'm glad I went back because we did have great nights. You know, Luther Dickinson was in the band for 4 years, and I got a great relationship with him out of it. Me and Sven reconnected, and we're close friends now. I mean, those things are really important to me. There's a lot of moments along the way that I'm really glad I had, you know. But in terms of, you know, the truth is, if I were going to look back and say I should have done something, I would have jumped in 97 when Johnny left. Mm-hmm. You know, that would have been the cleanest break possible. And that would have made the most sense because I really did want to go. And what I realized at that moment of truth was, oh, crap, I'm not ready for anything new. You know, I felt stuck. And so then I made damn sure I was ready next time. And then Jimmy Page called. And then so things happened. I keep trying to get out. And I've said this to a few people, and it's true. This was my experience in the band. And everybody's entitled to their own view of their own experience. But I can say that I was hardly the only guy constantly checking the exit sign. You know what I mean? I mean, everybody was doing that. Both Chris and Rich were. Chris was, of course, obviously, pretty steadily from 97 on.
Now, you say you'd be surprised if Chris and Rich didn't get back together and do something, but you have no interest in doing that because it can never be as good as it ever was.
They will. They'll be playing again. I don't think there's any question about that.
But there's no circumstance that you could ever think of where, even if it's a one-off show, that you would ever rejoin.
Here's the thing. Just to actually lay it on the table and look at the reality of what it would take, they're never going to ask. Okay? That's number one. They're not about to share money moving forward with me. That's just not going to happen. I mean, Chris already demanded. I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine what their conversations are right now, seeing as how Chris broke the band up trying to fleece his brother six years ago. So whatever decision they come to where they're like, all right, fuck it, let's go do this.
But they're hard on musicians, Steve. I mean, they're really hard on these guys. When it's not right, that's when they wanted you so bad.
Yeah. Well, you know.
So it's a catch 22.
But again, think about it. That says everything. The magic of the Black Crowes was always, to me, it was always that you had the right lineup at the right time playing the right songs. It was never because the Robinson brothers are geniuses. That's their view of it. You know, they can go do this with anybody. And the truth is they can't. They can go play Hard to Handle every night for the rest of time, for all I care. And people be like, I love that song. Great. But the band, the part of the band that was special and unique and cannot be replicated is a lot more than just the two of them, and it's a lot more, frankly, than just the three of us. And one of those guys, Ed Harsh, it should be mentioned, is no longer with us. It's never coming back in a way that could ever possibly compare to what it once was. And that's reason number two for me. Like, why go back to something that can never get close to being as great as it once was?
Drew was telling us, you know, about the difficulties between Chris and Rich when he was reading the book, and I was wondering, let's say they both were starting their own band, and they both wanted you really bad, and the money was right. If you had to choose one band to be in, would it be with Chris or would it be with Rich?
I might think about breaking an arm or something. No, I'm that wouldn't happen. Rich did ask me to play with his band, the Magpie Salute, and I you know, said no thanks. I have no interest in either of those. I mean, we can laugh about it and go, oh, you know, say whatever, you know, is it, you know, Hitler or Stalin? Who do you want to hang out with? Neither, you know.
The truth is,
the Black Crowes, to me, was five people, and then it was four people, and then it was six people, and then for a long time it was three people. But one thing it never was two people. And that's where they and I differ greatly on how we saw that band.
So are they coming after you for some of these stories? Or, I mean, obviously the publisher would make sure that all this is...
Yeah, who
would they sit down, read it, and be angry? Or
they can't be crazy about it.
I'm sure they're both already angry, but they don't know what's in the book, but they know what's in the book.
They would blame you rather than actually having a moment of self-reflection?
yeah,
we were dicks.
They don't sound big on self-reflection.
I think that the biggest issue to either of them would be that they are losing control of the narrative. More even than what it is I say, it's the concept of how dare you say anything. You know, don't you know how lucky you were to play with us? And my response would be, no, I thought you fuckers were lucky to play with me, but okay, whatever.
Well, just to change the subject a little bit, some highlights, and this one was so big. I laughed out loud at a number of places in the book, and one of them was when Chuck Lavelle, you know, who you guys were lucky enough to play with before this, you're opening for the Stones on Voodoo Lounge, and I think you were hanging out in the Voodoo Lounge or somewhere, and Keith Richards walks in, and you've met Wood, and I think you've met a couple of the guys, but hadn't met Keith, and Chuck says, Chuck says, hey, do you know the Black Crowes, Keith? And Keith says, know them, I wrote them, baby.
Yeah, of course. I mean, cool. You know, if you could ever hope for a first interaction with Keith Richards to be any cooler than that, I don't know how it could happen.
Yeah, he just sounded hilarious. So cool, and Ron Wood sounded so cool. And my God, that suite he had, I forgot where you guys were, but he had this giant suite with all this space and bedrooms and stuff, and wow.
Yeah, no, we had a lot of, and I'm not suggesting, and that was like a fun night. Like, we had a million laughs. I mean, there was a ton of fun times. It's you get away from something. You know, there's a lot of addiction. There's a lot of codependency. There's a lot of other things like that that fuel any band, and most certainly fuel the Black Crowes. And like a family, if you've got a family with addiction, there's a lot of secrets and there's a lot of unwritten rules and there's a whole lot of, well, this is okay, this is still okay. You have that conversation with yourself every day, and this band was much like that. You know, there was a sickness from the jump, and everybody did the best they could to keep it moving while throwing your hands up and going, there's nothing we can do to fix it. We just got to do our part. You know, it's through the efforts of a lot of people who do have a team first mentality that a band like the Black Crowes is able to continue to survive.
And the songs are just fantastic. I was listening to a lot of the first two records last night. And as you're going through the albums, I was putting them on and I had them on, and they're just, it's a fantastic band.
Well, there's that too. I mean, that's the thing. When you talk about the book, it's easy to lose sight of that. I mean, again, when we were good, man, we were pretty happening. Mm-hmm. I'm thrilled with what a great band we turned ourselves into. If things had gone the way I would have always liked them to be, we would still be that band, and none of us would have ever left. And you know, I never wanted to go into radio and write a book. I wanted to be the guy in the band that thought about doing those things, but I was too busy being in my band. You know.
Well, I want to go back to the deal. You know, here you guys are really without a lot of interest. Things are flagging, and this Jimmy Page thing comes up, and you do live at the Greek. You do a bunch of shows. I mean, the joy just came leaping off the page. I mean, it was so you were just about to leave the band, and then all of a sudden, whoa, this Jimmy Page thing comes through, and the shows are great, and he's such a nice guy. And Robert Plant, by the way, who you mentioned earlier, he sounded like such a great guy. Which you love reading stuff like that because I love these guys.
They were both, and of course not together, but individually, so impactful for a variety of reasons at different times in our career. And you know, you can never even if the me in 1990 knew what I was about to say, my head would have fallen off. But the fact that Robert and Jimmy both were such strong supporters of the band, and then both offered us again at different times in our career such a lifeline and so much support and acknowledgement, and it really, you know, if you want to feel like you're on the right path, have a guy like Robert Plant take you out when you're on your first record and say, you guys are a real band, there's not many left, you're one of the last ones, good for you, and hey, do you want to hang out tonight? You know, when in 1990 when Robert Plant would say that stuff to us, we would all just there was like a half second glitch in all of our brains every time he would say to us, you know, and we'd go, yes, we do, Robert. That's exactly what we wanted to do. You know, it's so shocking, but it meant the world to us. And it's, and again, not just because we're fans and because he's famous, it's, you know, we had such respect for what he did and how he did it. And then the same thing years later with Jimmy, for him to come in and give us that kind of an endorsement and then take it as far as he took it was, it, you know, it did. It redefined our career. It gave us a second breath of fresh air that we had, you know, had pretty much choked out ourselves. I mean, it was an incredible turn of events that we could have never, it's beyond our dreams. We never dawned on us to imagine that. You know what I mean? When everybody would say, like, dream come true to be playing with Jimmy, I'd go, yeah, if I'd thought to have it.
Now, but, when you say we were fans of them, there's this quote out there that Chris had when Live at the Greek came out that, I don't really like Robert Plant's lyrics or singing. It was just a job. Is he just being cantankerous?
Well, he's a dick. Yeah, I mean, he's just being a dick. That's all there is to it. It's like that's, and he did start to chafe, you know, by the summer of 2000. We were a few shows in and he started bitching about that. And it's just an example of no matter what, I got to piss on it. That's all it comes down to. It's like, I think I said in the book pretty, you know, and I, by the way, when I say, well, he's a dick, I that sounds horrible. It sounds like that. We called each other names so often and for so long. It's like me, you know, I'm not trying to throw gas on the guy. It's just what it was. And he, you know, had a very, very difficult time accepting anything going well. And that was always in play. It was in play in 1987, and it was in play in 2014, and it never went away. And, you know, he's the guy who could stand at the Palace at Auburn Hills singing Led Zeppelin songs with 16,000 people losing their fucking minds and walk off stage and go, I'm getting tired of this. Ugh. And, yeah. You know, that's just the reality. And he can say whatever he wants, but that's what everybody else saw. That's what he was doing at that time.
Yeah, I think the first sign was he said, I feel like I'm in a cover band. And yeah. And Rich kind of echoed that, too. And I think all of you guys were like, oh, no, no, this isn't happening.
Yeah.
Because you kind of sensed that this is headed for some bad end. And that's where I was really getting anxious in the book, by the way, because you guys were like 10 yeah. shows in or 8 shows in, and you got a 55-show deal. With Jimmy Page, and I heard, you know, I had the disc. I loved that. I thought it was fantastic. Yeah. It was like Led Zeppelin Part 2. And then,
well, and you know, the funny thing is there was no pressure. That's the thing that was so beautiful about it. Like, it was legitimately just a blast. Like, we were having so much fun, and we were able to enjoy it, at least initially, in a way that we didn't allow ourselves to enjoy the Black Crowes. It was like, hey, man, this is like going on vacation and we're finally going to go out and sit on the beach. And that's what it felt like initially. And then by the time, you know, the second run of dates in the summer 2000 rolled around, I was still very much in that mindset, but you know, the other guys, they there was a fundamental lack of trust in positivity at all times.
And oh boy, I hate to even go there. Cause honestly, it pained me to read about what ended the Jimmy Page and Black Crowes tour early, because here I was feeling so good about everything because Page seemed like such a good guy. He gets those jackets or the zip ups made for you guys with Jimmy Page. It was like, oh my God, Jimmy Page, he can't be this cool. This is like too cool. And
I have worried that Jimmy might not like the fact that I presented him as such a lovely chap.
That's funny.
He'll be the first guy to go, how dare you say such nice things about me?
Yeah, no, I thought it was really good because not many people have even deigned to suggest that they know him in any way where you can say whether he's a good guy or a bad guy. You just hear a lot of the mythology. So I really enjoyed that. And then the jackets, that was just kind of funny. I thought that was cool. I mean, well, who does that? I mean, Jimmy Page, you wouldn't think he'd do something like that. But then what happens is he has a back issue. He gets it resolved. And you think, oh, cool, we're marching on. And then all of a sudden, oh, nope, the tour's over. And the title of your chapter, I think, is Which One of You Two Fucked This Up?
Something along those lines. I think it's Which One of You Two Stupid Motherfuckers Did This?
Yeah, there you go.
Well, it should be said. I mean, he temporarily had his back fixed you know, he was feeling better. Now, he did have a significant back issue, and that is, he couldn't continue, you know, I don't know that he would have made it much longer than he did, but he was nudged a little bit. I mean, he did have a conversation with Rich that really dampened his enthusiasm considerably. I mean, his back was a mess. He went home and had surgery and was laid up for a while. That's all true. But what happened was he just, you know, and he said, I was really trying to work through it and keep it going. And then he just kind of lost all reason to try once, you know, he had a chat with Rich about the future.
Yeah. It involved, well, you know, I didn't know if I should give it away or not. It's an amazing, there's a lot of amazing things in this book. It's a lot, God, how many pages is this book? It's 344 packed pages. And I really felt...
I tell you what it is. It's a third of what I actually wrote.
Whoa. Is it really?
Oh, my God.
Oh. Yeah.
Hey, what I was always curious about, and I saw you guys, you and everybody else, at I think it was the Fox Theater. And
yeah, great venue.
Early in the 2000s, and people were pelting Chris with pennies, and it seemed like that happened a lot, because there's video not only there but other places. Why did people throw things at him?
Because he's a dick. I don't remember that in Detroit.
Because he's a dick.
Wow, that's interesting. If it was in the 2000s, it would have been the state. We did the Fox in the 90s. And then we were next door by the second run of the band. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, people did tend to throw things at him.
he reacted the way that they wanted him to, too. He would yell at people.
Oh, well, sure. Yeah.
Well, he yelled at people for not being into the show enough. I mean, that was pretty common. Yeah.
Well, the thing that used to crack me up the most was we'd be like you could be like, if we were in Detroit and he saw something and somebody, he'd be making a comment and somebody would good naturedly boo, and he'd say like, you know, he would reference, oh, this is what it was like. He'd reference, you know, if we were in Ann Arbor and he would reference Sparty and the audience would boo, his response would be, don't fucking boo me. It's like, they're not booing you. They're booing Sparty. You know, it's pretty obvious. There was a lot of those things that he just never really quite picked up on.
Speaking of dicks, I was reading that you said Max Weinberg went out of his way to be kind of rude to you every time you met him. And I couldn't figure out why. Do you know why?
He's three for three. I don't know. I don't know either. I it's one of my favorite things because it just makes no sense. It's just so
What were the scenarios?
The first time I went to see Ringo Starr do a Storytellers for VH1, like the show in the 90s, it was like 98 in New York. And after the taping, I was waiting around. I'd never met Ringo at that point, so I was going to finally get to meet him. And I was waiting backstage with Kevin Shirley, who he was producing our album at the time. And I was talking with Simon Kirk, who of course was in Free and then Bad Company, because he was Ringo's drummer on that tour. And I met Simon, who I was thrilled to meet. I was like, oh, my God, man, I've ripped you off from day one. Like, it's great to meet you. And as we were chatting, Max came over to say hi to Simon. And then Max's wife, as it turned out, was a big Black Crowes fan. And she was like, oh, my God, I love the Black Crowes. The Southern Harmony is my favorite record. I said, oh, thanks, nice to meet you. She goes, well, this is my husband, Max. And so she actually introduced him to me. And he just looked at me, and she goes, Max, this is Steve. He's the drummer of Black Crowes. And he went, oh, good for you, and turned his back on me. And I'm just the way I am. I just started laughing, really. Yeah. I was like, oh, my God, that's awesome. And his wife was embarrassed a little bit, you know. And it's been like that two other times. I mean, two occasions where it's like, Max, do you know Steve? And he'll just completely turn away from me, and all three times I'm like, there he goes, right on. Cracks me up. I think all this shit's just funny. I mean, and I'm glad you said you were laughing in the book at a lot of things, because it's all absurd comedy to me. Every band is just a car crash happening in slow motion. I mean, that's what it is,
man. No, there was obviously some a lot of humor in there. The interaction with Sting when Ed Harsh tries to, you know, address him, and he just Sting seemed, what was he, just royalty above it all? He just couldn't address Ed Harsh.
He just who knows? I mean, just the fact that that was just 100% about Ed's view on the world at all times. Ed was still the funniest fucking guy ever, man, and he. You know, I was talking with a friend the other day who reminded me of Andy Sturmer, who was in a band called Jellyfish, which is just such a great band from the early 90s. We were making our third album, and Andy was in the studio one day, and and Ed came in and was like angry, and he was holding a Rolling Stone magazine. And everyone's like, what's up with you? He goes, I'm just sick of everybody taking our shit, man, ripping us off. And everybody's like, what? What are you talking about? And he goes, look at this shit, man. Counting Crows. Sheryl Crow. And then there's this pause, and we're all looking at him. And then he goes, Clint Black. and everyone just falls out laughing. You know, that was like that's Ed right there in a nutshell. He was the best.
Well, you know, it's funny. There's a lot of substances that come across a band in the course of all this time naturally, and Ed was not afraid to imbibe. And he was on a bit of a bender, and you guys are driving through. I think you were in Belgium. And he literally collapsed on the bus, and you get in the hospital, which, you know, they really didn't have much available. A doctor, I guess, took 30 minutes to get there. And it turned out Ed hadn't eaten anything, but what did he say? He said, all I had was...
They said, the doctor was like, Ed, you have to tell me what you've eaten today. And he was writhing in pain. It was really terrifying. And then he finally looked up and he said, caffeine, codeine, and cocaine.
Oh, my God. That sounds like a song title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they, I guess they sent him on his way with 500 Xanax and 500 Valiums or something.
They loaded him up, man. It was incredible. He hit the ground running when we picked him up a week later. I can tell you that.
Yeah, I always knew that he was highly thought of, but you really gave him some great props in the book.
Oh, Ed was. I mean, musically, he's untouchable, and we all learned. You know, he raised the bar so much for us when he joined the band, and we just couldn't help but turn us into twice the band we ever thought we could be. And then, you know, he did have a lot of problems, but you know, he had a heart of gold. I mean, Ed would do anything for you. He was always in a good, you know, for the most part, always in a great mindset, always up for a laugh. Just a good, solid dude, you know what I mean? And he had a lot of troubles and was not proud of himself for that, like people in that situation are. Addiction is an absolute nightmare for the person in the middle of it and the people who care about him. But through all that, Ed maintained a real sense of humanity and love for other people, you know, and the truth is, when he died in 2016, that was some sort of a... I don't think I would have written this book if he hadn't died, because it really triggered a thing in me of... I knew the Black Crowes were dead. I knew it was over. And despite, you know, again, I say if the brothers go out next year or something, that's fine. You can do whatever you want. But as far as the band that anybody thinks of, and it certainly mattered to me, my band is dead. And I knew that long before Eddie actually did die, but boy, there was a finality that came with his passing that just put it so far in the rear view that I think that gave me I just had a perspective on the band that was, I was like, oh, I see it all right now. Oh, I actually see all of this. Okay. It's, you know, the book had closed, and so then I could actually sit down and kind of put it all out there. You know, the figurative book on the Black Crowes was over from the minute Ed was gone. And I thought, okay, well, I'm going to tell my story now.
Not to be morbid, but another death. You played on one of Warren Zevon's last album. It's a really wild story how you ended up recording with them, and where you were when you recorded is kind of odd too.
It was incredible. It was one of my favorite days ever. I just finished a session at Billy Bob Thornton's house. you know, Billy Bob Thornton bought a house from Slash, and so they built it. Slash had a studio in there, and Billy makes records and plays music. And you know, he was a musician before he was ever trying to be a writer or an actor. So he always had bands growing up. And he was making a record in 2002, and then his engineer Jim Mitchell is the guy that had worked with the Crowes in '93 and '94 a little bit. So I ran into Jim, and he said, "Hey, do you want to come play on this Billy Bob thing?" I'm thinking, sure. Well, you know. Hell, that'd be kind of fun, maybe. Did a few days tracking with Billy Bob and his band, and then as we were wrapping up one night around midnight, Warren just popped in. And I guess Billy Bob knew he was coming, but hadn't thought to mention that to me. And so Warren walks into this studio, and he had announced a few months earlier that he was terminally ill. So, you know, my first thought, I saw him walk in, and I was like, oh, my God, that's Warren Zevon, and he's dying. Like, it went right up and down. Because I've always been a huge fan. And then But he sat down and we all hung out for a while, and he was telling stories, and he was hilariously funny, of course, and super charming. And he had been sober for years, and his oncologist said, you know what, man, let her rip. You're not going to be here long. He really did tell him that. So he's drinking and having a cigarette and just dealing with reality, which for him was, you know, getting shorter and shorter with every day. And he had finished making that his last album for the most part, but he said, well, I was thinking I might want to do a Dylan tune. And Tommy Shaw, of all people, from Styx was there that night too. And Tommy goes, what, like Knocking on Heaven's Door? And everybody laughed, you know, thinking that was a joke. And Warren goes, yeah, actually, I do want to sing that. And there was like a 2 second beat, and everyone just sat there, and then we jumped up, and all the musicians, we all ran out to the room, and everyone had the same thought, which was, okay, let's do this before he changes his mind. You know, like, holy shit, we're about to play Knocking on Heaven's Door with Warren Zevon. Wow. And we walked in and sat down, and I remember I said, so intro, verse, chorus, solo, chorus, out. And Tommy goes, yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, that's the arrangement. And everybody went, okay. And we played that song one time, and that's the one that's on the album.
My unbelievable. I love Warren Zevon going all the way back to Excitable Boy, and I mean the very first stuff, and God, Stand in the Fire is such a great live album. Have you ever heard Warren's version of Back in the High Life, the Steve Winwood song?
I feel like I have. I'm not hearing it in my head right now, but that rang enough of a bell where I'm like, yeah, at some point I must have.
It's a real slow, wistful version. I mean, obviously he's not going to be back in the high life again at that point. Yeah. I think he barely had a record deal, but wow, it really is powerful. It really hit me hard when he played that. But hey, you know, I know we've taken up a lot of your time, 35 minutes, in fact, and I want people to have something to read, so let's not tell the whole story behind Hard to Handle, The Life and Death of the Black Crowes, Steve Gorman with Steve Hyden. And then also Steve Gorman rocks Monday through Friday, 7 to midnight. That's a long show, Steve.
You know, man, I mean, the people need their rock music. Who am I to deny them?
You're on WXKR in Toledo and also WLAV in Grand Rapids. So no Detroit affiliate yet, but who knows? Maybe we'll be announcing that soon. But it'd be great to talk again anytime, man. Let us know if you're coming around or got something to talk about.
I appreciate that very much. I will just say it, just so it's out there, I am a Muskegon, Michigan native.
Ah, yes.
From my parents, both from Detroit. So I grew up with, I left as a baby, but Detroit looms very large in the Gorman family story.
Sweet. Well, we got to get you on the radio here, Steve.
Oh, he will be on Saturday.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Sunday. You'll be on WLLZ. That's right, 106.7, because this will be on WLLZ. There you go. Maybe they'll get the hint.
Yep. Cool.
Come on, WLLZ, get it together.
Yeah, please.
What do I got to do? Who do I got to talk to?
Steve, thanks so much. I love the book.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Have a good one. Say hi to Troy. Guys.
Thanks, Steve.
Cheers.
See ya. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. Hey, Brandon, can you find Back in the High Life?
The first absurd thing was
by Warren.
Thinking of Billy Bob Thornton's band. And I can't stop hearing the thing from Sling Blade. But
oh, that's right.
I know.
I was thinking of him doing the interview where he says, you know, about the Tom Petty
you
drop.
Say that about Tom Petty. I looked it up. We wanted to spend like 8 more hours with Steve because that's when Billy Bob was with Angelina. We wanted to go, hey, was she there?
Yeah. No, I really wanted to ask him about Kate. I mean, honest to God, we could talk for. There's so many things.
Look at
this
life
book.
He's lived.
And he's so good at answering, too.
Yeah, he's a broadcaster.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Warren Zevon.
Life will kill you.
For a bike show.
It used to seem to me that my life ran on too fast, and I had to take it slowly just to make the good parts last. When you're born to run, it's so hard to just slow down. So don't be surprised to see me in the brighter part of town. And I'll be back in the high life again. All the doors are closed one time, will open up again.
This is when he barely had a record deal.
I'll be back in the high life again. All the eyes softly ones will smile and take me in.
Slow down.
Yeah, I'm sure you've probably heard the Steve Winwood version, yeah, which is very upbeat. Oh yeah, all the doors closed, will open up again, and you know, I'm back in the high life again. And he did. He just was coming off a huge album, and Warren was not. Warren was really pretty low on the totem pole at that point. I think that was a late '90s version of Back in the High Life.
Sucked ass that he was ever at that point.
He didn't have a record deal for like 5 years.
Oh my
God. Know it's terrible. Warren's on, and you know, not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And he's one of those guys that all the artists love.
Yeah,
he's such a good storyteller within us in his song, and they're always so catchy too.
I know. It's hard to believe everyone knows him for Werewolves of London, not much else.
Right.
But yeah. That's how it goes. That's why we love him so much. He's ours and hardly anyone else's.
Yeah, absolutely. Poor, poor, pitiful me. I love that song.
Yeah, his version is quite different.
Yes.
Linda Ronstadt picked great covers. I have to say that about. Yeah. I mean, she's got an incredible voice. She covered like 5 Elvis Costello songs.
So
she
what's
covered,
this thing Linda's got going on, too? They've got
she's
a
got
documentary
a
about
documentary,
her?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another.
Yeah, she's got Parkinson's. I don't think she performs, or maybe she does something limited. Or she had retired, and then I think she came out of retirement, and I don't know where she's at now. I know. Too bad.
Sorry, didn't mean
to. Still have the Phil Hartman thing queued up.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, why don't we take a look at that? And we got the boner. We have a boner line.
Bono.
And a few other items. Great talk, to Steve Gorman. Thanks to Troy
really
Hansen
cool. yeah.
for hooking that up. And who knows. Maybe he will land on the...
Troy!
So is he playing music on the show?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Because I got the feeling that he was going to talk to a lot of his rock and roll friends, too.
Yeah,
you know, some interviews and stuff.
Probably kind of like what Nikki Sixx does.
I
would think. I mean, I haven't heard it yet.
Did Nikki have a show that was syndicated or on satellite or something?
Oh, yeah, no, it was syndicated.
I didn't realize it. I thought it was a podcast.
I think he still does.
Yeah, I still hear it from time to time.
What's it on?
Couldn't tell you what.
Is it on Octane?
I don't know.
Is it good?
It's Nikki. It's okay. And Nikki's likable.
Oh, absolutely. I like Nikki.
I don't know. I mean,
he's different.
We only like the certain same amount of songs. I mean,
I know.
So, you know, that's fine.
Yeah, he's not.
I probably have more Steve Gorman songs that he'll play than Nikki's, I think. I don't know.
Honestly, I feel like I'm sort of a late in life Motley Crue fan. Like, I did not appreciate any of the hairband period to me was just like a black hole in music. And then I read The Dirt. So I was always interested in their personalities.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys were always larger than life. Then the Netflix movie was also, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
No, I have no problem with Crue. I don't know if it's something I would search out and put on purposefully.
Well, after I saw the Netflix movie, I watched the final show. Because there was a documentary, not a doc, it was like the final concert. And they had some pre-show stuff, and I think it had some after-show stuff. And I don't know. I don't think I've ever appreciated Motley Crue quite as much as I did.
Very good. Yeah.
I guess they're poppier than I ever was able to acknowledge to myself. Mm-hmm. They have good hooks, and you know Nicky writes those songs.
It's all about Nicky, really.
A lot of it is, yeah.
Does he really get the credit for the band?
Probably not. No.
Probably more now than he did then.
Anyway, so 2020 is doing a Phil Hartman story, and I'm kind of amazed. Why does it take 20 years to really get to the meat of this story? Is it just so painful and ugly that
passage of time helps? You know, when we talked to Andy, and Andy mentioned it, he said he's never talked about it before. I think it helps that ABC and 2020 are doing it.
Yeah, he certainly had a couple battles over it with John Lovitz, and
but it says here
tried to blame him for it, which is bullshit.
It says here brother-in-law breaks his silence 20 years. So I think the weight of 2020 helps, the importance of it.
I'll always remember when we were at sports radio. You had read the real big, thick book on Phil Hartman.
Oh wow, what a book! That was a great book.
We talked about the interview.
Yeah, we did the interview with the author.
Yeah,
and then like maybe 2 minutes after we hung up with him, we had an interview scheduled with Joe Rogan, who obviously worked with Phil Hartman.
Oh,
so you opened the interview with hey, by the way, we just talked to the author of this book. We were just wondering, you know, what that was like, and you know,
He was not happy.
It's a little weird. You know, he was kind of a little weird about it. But then the next, like that day, he goes on his podcast and like just talks all this shit about. The first question was about Phil Hartman. He's all mad. He's been out of shape.
Well, to that point, I kind of give him credit for not just going off on us totally because it clearly bothered him.
It was just a sheer coincidence. It's not like the book was out. People were talking about Phil Hartman. I mean, he could have just said, I wish he'd just said, look, respectfully, I just don't want to
talk about it. Yeah.
Whatever.
Is he going to be on this?
It certainly was.
Los Angeles with the story. Good morning, Chris.
I don't know.
You know, on SNL and elsewhere, on talk shows, on The Simpsons, funny man Phil Hartman could always make people laugh. Then on a day in May of 1998, that laughter transformed into shocked silence. And the question, why? 2 decades later, on a 2-hour ABC News event airing tomorrow, there are some answers at last. He made millions laugh as President Clinton on Saturday Night Live.
Jim, let me tell you something. There's going to be a whole bunch of things we don't tell Mrs. Clinton.
And as a self-centered radio host on news radio.
It's time for...
The Real Deal with Bill McNeil.
I'm your host, Bill McNeil.
Phil Hartman was at the top of his game, starring on TV and in movies, when in 1998, at the age of 49, he was shot and killed by his wife, Bryn Hartman, who then killed herself.
After I heard Bryn had shot Phil.
It's Bryn's brother.
And then heard Bryn had shot herself, I think everyone was in shock in the family. And I cannot imagine why she would do that.
And now for the first time in a new ABC News special, details of the couple's relationship from Greg Omdahl, Bryn Hartman's brother.
I would say Bryn confided in me quite a bit. I know she was upset with Phil on one, maybe two occasions where he would be doing a part, The Simpsons or news radio. He had mentioned to Bryn that, you know, maybe I can get you a part.
Yeah, because she pounded the shit out of him.
She'd say, well, did you talk to him about, you know, getting me a part? And he'd say, oh, I forgot. And she'd be upset about that.
And an inside look at the Hartman family before tragedy struck.
It sounds like he's giving a credence.
Hello.
By all external appearances, they look like a very, very happy couple and family. But there are cracks in the armor.
What makes me the happiest? Well, without question, it's being a father.
The video of Phil playing Simon Says with the two kids.
Simon Says, run in a circle. Simon Says, stop. Simon Says, hands in the air. Hands at your sides.
They loved him very much. It showed on the videos.
Kind of takes away from when she murders him and herself.
With the kids is in the house.
Cute trouble. Stuff with the kids really loses its allure.
Busy work Simon says, and Bryn your substance husband. Abuse issues until the early morning hours of May 28th, when Bryn returned home from a night of drinking
house,
and shot her husband. Just hours later, as police arrived on the scene, Bryn would take her own life as well.
So selfish. She could take him away from everybody.
Little brother?
He's a friend of Phil.
A friend.
I've lost a sister that was such a wonderful person. And a brother-in-law who was wonderful. And it was very hard. It was...
Did he say... Do you have a bigger compliment for her than him?
Yeah.
Because...
It's kind of bullshit.
She knew him longer. He knew her longer.
Never murder anyone. It was such a hard thing to face.
You really shouldn't murder people.
The couple's two young children, 9 and 6 years old at
the time. I don't
think
she was that wonderful, frankly.
He says he knew her so well that she'd never murder anybody, so that seems off.
They would be raised by Bryn's sister after their parents' deaths. Now, more than 20 years later, Greg Omdahl says they are thriving.
Bergen's doing great.
Bergen's awesome.
Beautiful.
She's married now, and her and her husband have started a business that's doing real well.
Hey, Bergie, what do you want to say to yourself 10 years from now?
She's a beautiful gal and has a handsome husband, and she's living a normal, happy life. Sean's doing well. He got a degree in art, and he's pursuing his dream of being an artist and musician.
Hi.
I believe Bryn and Phil would be very proud of how Sean and Bryn
have
grown
Bryn
up and the
be
people
proud,
they've turned
frankly.
Into.
For 2 decades,
God
Phil's
almighty,
fans,
come
friends,
on.
And family have all struggled to make sense of that early morning and what led to those tragic deaths. hear more powerful personal recollections and see more of those intimate glimpses inside their lives tomorrow night.
I'm sorry, she's horrible. She was, I mean...
Yeah. That preview sucked. I don't want to know all that stuff. I want to know, I want to know the scarier stuff, the dirtier stuff.
Yeah, I know. I was surprised there wasn't one clip of Andy Dick in there, but...
They always paint it with a, you know, kind of a an ABC Good Morning America brush.
There's their daughter, Brandon's looking at her on Instagram.
Yeah, I noticed Brandon was looking at some pictures of some pretty hot women while that was going on. Huh? Didn't know what was going on.
Oh,
exactly.
That's her daughter?
Yeah, his daughter.
Oh, nice. This picture of your butt from behind.
I know, it's in her wedding dress, too.
Yeah.
That's a nice
are there any creepy comments?
It is
comments?
Actually a nice picture.
No, there's no creepy comments, really. Oh.
You know, that thing he mentioned about the Simpsons was like, what are you talking about? I mean, something like, oh, yeah, I did tell her that she could probably do be on the Simpsons, too, so it's sort of his fault.
When he should have said, when she nagged him about it, was, hey, I don't produce a show.
Hey, it's my fucking career.
Well,
get
I don't
your
produce
own career,
a show
bitch.
Anyway. What do you want me to do?
No, he pushed her career.
Now go make me a sandwich.
He actually... embarrassed himself. There were colleagues of his who said, I couldn't believe he was trying to push this crap script of hers.
He sounded overly nice to everyone.
And she was overly pushy. She was jealous of his career.
Keep saying push, and Brandon just like
on cue.
Couldn't help.
Oh, look how proud himself
he was. Very ducky one, too.
It was.
Your money's on the dresser, baby. I'm done with you.
That's what he should have said.
She just, I mean, you should bring your own thing to a marriage and not expect the other person to sell
she
you.
She did. She was hot. That's what she thought.
To more than that.
She sounded like she...
I'm bringing this pussy.
I don't know. I can't say enough lousy things about her.
Being hot and pussy doesn't count because, you know...
I'm just saying that's what she probably thought.
Oh, okay.
Rest in peace.
Right. Yeah, she is missed. Definitely.
By her brother.
She would be proud.
Very
she would be,
people.
She would be proud of the kids that she should not be proud of.
She can be proud of them. She should be proud of them because they didn't have a mother or father because she killed them both.
Yeah. They did very well in spite of her murders.
Mm-hmm.
You want to hit the boner line, Brandon?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
And the boner line number is 209-66-BONER.
Brandon,
are people still calling the boner line?
He does have
line?
A disclaimer before he plays this one.
Yeah, some of the stuff is, I'm not going to say old, but recorded maybe last week. So you'll hear some stuff, I don't know, some 9/11 stuff.
Are you
stuff.
Saying you're not keeping up with the boner line?
No, that's not true at all.
Oh, okay.
There's also stuff on Righteous, Rick, and you'll see. All
right. I see.
Drew, Mark, Brandon, Judy, Maz.
You had me at hello.
Drew, you fucking moron.
It's nice to see you again, Mr. Insult.
On Twitter, retweeting that video of the hurricane. That's not even real. It's a fucking Adobe SolidFlare video. So you're canceled.
I've never heard of a show being canceled because of homeless.
Hey, one question. After listening to the Antonio Brown emails, how can we get Sewell Perkins to reenact these? Someone needs to reach out to him.
Make it happen.
I am not a conspiracy theorist. The FBI and the CIA did go around and gather up all the security footage, and there was a lot. Me not being a conspiracy theorist, I do have to agree with Brandon.
Shut up, conspiracy theorist.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist. You know, not like Brandon, but... So, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I think there's a lot of weight to what Brandon's saying. I mean, you know, because I'm not a conspiracy theorist. But, you know, it does sound kind of weird. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I can totally buy into Brandon's conspiracy theory. I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I'm with him on this one.
I'm just saying what everyone's thinking here. Sorry, not sorry.
I'm not a truther either, like Brandon is. Quick feedback on Righteous Rick egg timer, 4 minutes. Perfect.
Get him out of here.
Calling about the Righteous Rick egg timer feedback. I think it's perfect, except you do need a gong or a really, really loud buzzer.
Hey, not much of a fan of Righteous Rick, but I love the idea of being on an egg timer.
Out, out, out.
Yeah, egg timer Righteous Rick feedback. Quite honestly, it gives me severe anxiety knowing that he's going to be cut off in the middle of a sentence. This is a vote in favor of the egg timer for Righteous Rick phone calls.
Get out of here!
Please keep the egg timer.
can't stand him, but it's a little bit more bearable knowing that he's only got 4 minutes to talk.
Good, get the hell out of my life. Who needs you? Beat it.
Hey, Drew, I noticed the time change for the show On the Wheels. You know, if that opportunity falls apart, there's always room on 9:10 a.m. In fact, they just cleared a spot, if you remember.
Soon, sweet. AM radio will reign king once more.
I got a better idea. No fucking way.
Drew, maybe people are giving you shit about not knowing how to be on the front row because you keep calling your snacks pecans. The fuck?
Anybody want a peanut?
Drew, it's pecan, not pecan. It's pecan. What are you going to do, start calling things a soda instead of a pop now? Get it right. Come on.
Oh, my God. This one is so sensitive.
Quick separated at birth. The Antonio Brown art and the Bezos drop. Specifically the...
Yeah, Antonio Brown's farts are audio separated at birth with Chuck Berry's farts, but they're also audio separated at birth with Bezos grunts.
There's a possible separated at birth
brilliant.
With the Antonio Brown booming fart with... Jeff Bezos, nailing that chick.
Shout out to Layla.
Keep it spin.
I called your show. Ha! So guess what? Goodbye!
That's it.
That was wow. really good. The Bezos separate birth was fantastic.
It really was. Wow, Bezos. Good call.
Hey, just briefly reflect on Righteous Rick. Aaron Carter.
Yeah. Oh, you know, he's. I get all my Aaron Carter news from texts from Rick
because
he
oh,
sends
you do?
Me all the articles. Yeah. Restraining. I'm going to get him on TMZ Live one of these days.
Restraining orders against Aaron from his brother Nick and also from his sister, and I guess. What are you doing, Brandon?
Is he laughing?
Yes. Okay. He's trying to look away so we can't see that he's laughing. So proud of himself.
What lame excuse are you going to come up with?
Oh, yeah. apparently, Aaron Carter was threatening his pregnant wife.
And unborn child.
Oh, boy. So they're going to take the guns away from him at
no,
least, right?
No, what? Not
no,
at all.
I thought
no.
they said they were going to try to, like...
God, I don't... Games. Restraining order doesn't take a gun away
how
from somebody, does it?
Yeah, where were these threats?
I don't know.
Well, and then he did tweet stuff about it later. Did you see his vicious
oh, yeah, Aaron,
tweets?
This is one I love that everyone has a voice, so we can all hear his ridiculous yeah. statement and see all of the people who have his back.
I'll be just fine without them. They need to leave me alone. Michael Jackson told me this was going to happen, and he was right!
What? Is that really the time to quote Michael Jackson?
Michael Jackson speaking to him from beyond?
Yeah.
Then he shared an old clip from House of Carters, the reality show they were yeah. on. And then Aaron wrote, "Leave me alone for the rest of my life. I'm begging you, please."
There's a restraining order against you, Aaron. Yeah, he doesn't want it. Yeah,
why don't you leave them alone?
That's him leaving you alone.
I haven't even seen
good,
you guys.
Get the hell out of my life. Who needs you? Beat it. Leave me alone.
And Nick, you bullied me my whole life and tortured me as a child. And everyone knows it. It's been public. Now you're scared of the truth. So my brother just got a restraining order against me, and I was just served. LOL. Take care, at Nick Carter. We're done for life.
Ooh. Well, when there's a restraining order against you, it kind of ends you for quite a while, too.
That's like the you're fired, I quit thing.
Yes.
See how many times cops have been called to Aaron Carter's house in the last 2 weeks?
How many?
Eight. Eight times in the last 2 weeks. He said, "I don't deserve welfare checks from my family all the time. The cops keep coming and they leave 15 minutes later."
But why are so many people suggesting he needs a welfare check?
Because he's nuts.
Yeah, I know he's nuts.
Yeah.
Kook.
Meanwhile, the singer also told his fans, "I have an eating disorder and they think I'm on drugs. I drink Ensure all the time."
Oh, that's healthy.
If you drink 2 in the morning, 2 at night, you get 1,400 calories. You gain half a pound a day.
Oh,
you trying to get a dealer a sponsorship with Ensure?
He wears a sweatshirt all the time.
Yeah.
I think to hide the fact that he's so skinny.
Yeah,
I assume that's why
something's
he does
up with him.
That appearance in the doctor's was just ridiculous.
Well, thank God he's got tons of new guns.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Good call.
I'm so glad that he's got a voice and we can always hear his ridiculous thoughts.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, so Rick sent
me that.
When
does he go away, by the way? I mean, it's like TMZ has him on. I'm like, is he really, or is it just because he's nuts? I guess it's just because he's nuts.
Yeah. Does he have to surrender? Spectacle. Does he have to give up his guns now that there's a PPO?
I don't think so.
Is that what you said?
I don't believe so.
Sorry.
I thought I saw something, a headline today that said that they might have to.
Uh oh.
I don't know.
I mean, I heard
it
from
Righteous. That's going to go well.
I heard it from Righteous Rick. He sent me the story. Wrote, here's how it begins. Once he has a PPO on him, he has to surrender his weapons. Huh. And Rick knows there's probably tons of PPOs out against him. But how does Rick surrender his arms?
I don't think Aaron
Carter's weapons.
I don't think Aaron Carr is going to want to give up his weapons. He talks about them a lot.
Yeah, I know.
And he brought out his license on the doctors. Remember? My God.
So stupid. That was so embarrassing.
Well, you know what? I'd say let's fast forward to the point where he's gone, but I don't think that's going to go well. So
no, it could be really messy.
Yeah. So whoever
gave, another Bryn Hartman.
So whoever gave him the license, congratulations in the future.
I think the best thing would be for maybe he should be off social media, but I know that's not going to happen. That is so not going to happen.
It's really all started when he lost his phone.
It does seem like it did.
I blame Rick.
Thomas Middleditch.
Oh, get him out of here. I'm done with him.
From Silicon Valley, why is he out saying, hey, me and my wife Molly, we swing, and it's been great for our marriage.
Did you read all the quotes, by the way?
Yeah.
We have different speeds.
I know. He just wants to do everything and everyone, and she has to like saying, no!
The fact is, I just like it. I'm sexual. I'm gas and she's brakes.
Doesn't sound like...
Molly and I have created our own rules, and compared to most people we've met who do this kind of shit, our rules are strict.
You know, I think he had to become a swinger to make up for all the time he lost when no one would do him.
Maybe.
That's possible. In, out, in, out, three times.
I think Verizon's pretty pumped that this article's out there. Since I see him more in the Verizon commercials than I do on Silicon Valley.
Uh-huh. Do you think his wife Molly is pumped about all this?
Well, she's into it.
He said
she's pretty hot, too.
She's really hot. Yeah. At one point, he said, I don't want to say too much because I don't want to upset Molly or her family. Like, you already said way
late,
too much.
My man.
What the hell?
Is he attractive at all, Trudy?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. 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 Well, wallet now. Yeah, but not him.
Really not right. Like that picture.
No. Sorry. No. Huh. Well,
yeah.
You think he is?
Oh, I have no idea.
What you see?
What about right there?
I was surprised.
His bod pretty tight.
I was surprised to see how tight, how hot she was.
Kind of
to
a long
be honest,
face.
She's really pretty.
Know.
Yeah, long face, pointy nose.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, in Silicon Valley, now I wonder if T.J. Miller was the one who needed to be thrown off that show.
Oh, why? Because they're all swinging now? A big old...
I wouldn't think he'd be a real hit in the swingers community. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
Really? We've seen some...
the lifestyle.
We've seen some yes. videos. I think he might be all right. He might do fine.
That's true.
What? No.
Well, just I don't even want... swingers.
Remember Clark used to talk about how they would just be nude around a potluck dinner?
No.
Everybody brings a dish to pass, and then they're all standing there nude.
Jeez.
Pretty heavy scene.
So
pretty soon, I bet they'll all be swinging together.
We'll probably get another email from those swingers.
So I'm watching, or I'm reading about Tekashi 6ix9ine, because he's testifying about the inner workings of the Nine Tray Gangsta Bloods. And, you know, he's facing 47 years in prison for a variety of crimes, a number of which are on his phone. He recorded them.
Always a great idea.
I know. But he's hoping to get a lighter sentence, which would be good because, you know, his baby mama with the giant 6ix9ine tattoos all over.
Yeah, she looks great.
Which probably now look like green blobs. But anyway, hopefully she'll only have to wait like 20 years for him to make those tattoos
69.
active again. Although I guess they do mark her as his because she's got the 69s.
I thought he flipped, though. That's
yeah,
all,
he did flip. Yeah, he did.
It's only cut down to 20 years.
Well, I don't know how much it's cut down. He's giving me witness protection, it sounds
did you
like.
See who is not happy with him?
Who?
Snoop Dogg.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see Snoop's comment? I was surprised at his comments
say?
About it. Let me find it.
Well, everybody's very mad. You know, no him. Snitching. No snitching. Here he is snitching.
Do you have the full quote, what Snoop said?
By the way, this whole no snitching concept, Is that really something? I mean, because I see people wearing T-shirts that say no snitching, like rap stars and stuff. And I go, is this really something that should be pushed? I mean, is it really okay to be running around going, no snitching? Because I saw this story on ID, which was very much relatable in terms of this topic. And it was about this guy, this girl. She was sort of an internet star. She did a lot of she made clothing, and she did a lot of sewing and stuff, and she would show how she made these dresses for her kids and for herself, and she had a big following. She had like 150,000 followers, and she goes through two relationships with stalky types of guys who she just desperately wants to get away from because they're very controlling, and then she meets this new guy, and she likes him, and he's sleeping with her at her house in, I think it was Sacramento, and I think he'd gotten up in the middle of the night, and he was walking back to the bedroom, and there was someone standing over her with a gun, and they fired the gun, and this guy runs out of the house, gets in her car, and takes off. Oh. So immediately they're like, oh, the guy she's sleeping with did it. And they, you know, they go through the whole thing, and he's like, it turns out, no, he didn't do it. He knew the guy that shot her. It was one of the stalky exes, and he didn't want to snitch on him. He murdered his girlfriend, and he didn't want to snitch on this guy.
Wow.
Because he felt if he snitched, then something would happen to him.
Snitches get stitches.
God, what a coward. Man.
But this no snitching is not a small thing. There are a lot of people who, like Snoop Dogg, I mean, this is a public figure, yeah. A famous person saying no snitching.
Someone posted something about Tekashi 69 and using his attorney on Instagram, and then Snoop commented, let that rat rot, G-code. His former manager said he broke every code, every rule out this motherfucker. He's an ungrateful rat bastard. There's another big
he also had a post that it was
called him a rat,
kind of like a meme, and yeah. It's got a picture of him, and it says Tekashi 69 is safe and secured in jail with other snitches.
Yeah, like Snoop's going after him hard.
How can this guy possibly be in witness protection? What's he
he's gonna be in Dr. Roach's office for 2 years.
Change the 6 to an 8. No, I'm Gary 89.
Oh no, he could do the yin yang symbol. Make him
yin yang. Yeah, there you go.
And then everywhere. When he gets out, he can start a rap career. Yin yang.
Oh, great idea.
Tekashi yin yang.
By the way, did G code? I mean, Snoop Dogg is so far from.
Well, that's kind of what my original.
Not street.
Is. He's. I mean, I know he was a Crip, but he's so corporate now.
Well, he's evolved so far.
He
past
did murder
that.
Someone allegedly.
He did murder. No, well,
back
more
in the day.
Less case they no, gave him. he got a very short sentence for it.
I know.
Assalamu alaikum, my brother.
I read about that, and I heard about it on Disgraceland. I was like, wow, that was a really short sentence for that. He sought that guy out.
I know.
He consorts with known felons like Martha Stewart, though. So.
Oh, that's come true. On, nephew!
I don't know. This whole, again, I'm just amazed anytime, to this day, when I hear no snitching, I just kind of go, this guy shot your girlfriend in the head and you don't want to snitch? You're afraid of snitching? Something will happen to you for saying, who shot your girlfriend in the head? That's a problem. You're supposed to just go, hey, that's cool, man. I'm not going to snitch. That's way worse than murder.
Plus, he runs away from the house where he could have been, you know.
No, he was a suspect. They thought he did it. I know, it was just...
I got to tell you, the courtroom sketches of him on the stand are really cool. Have you seen him?
I did see one.
It's obviously it's him because he's got 69 on his head. It's just funny to see it drawn like that. I don't know.
John Gosselin breaking his silence. We were talking about some audio before the show.
Yeah.
John Gosselin had a 10-year...
I'm on gag.
Gag order, I guess. He's not allowed...
Here's another thing.
I guess this is the divorce agreement or something? Or is this with TLC? Don't
you wish the whole gag order covered everything so he never had to hear from
him? Yeah, I wouldn't mind not hearing because I knew he was going to just rip Kate.
I get it.
I just mean everything because we hear from him so often.
Yeah, no, I could definitely go without hearing from him.
Should we call the Applebee's?
The fact that he's breaking his silence. Well, he only DJs there once a year, doesn't he?
I thought it was every so often.
Wasn't Valentine's Day or something?
Oh, maybe.
Stripping? Who said I was stripping?
They had 50 people there. It was a big deal.
We do not know how much he was comp, though. They would not give that up.
It was like weird.
This has some of his comments about Kate. And this is the funny thing. He's the far more likable person between the two.
I have some audio here.
It's not even close.
Yeah, let's hear what how John broke us down. This is important.
Why did I do this?
You know, it's been 10 years since the hit TV show went off the air.
Acted like it's this big story.
What is a big story? It's John Gosselin.
Says it's time to set the record straight with shocking claims about Kate, why he left the show, and who wanted to make him the most hated man in America.
She's completely narcissistic, bipolar, selfish.
Wow.
Up, down, up, down, up, down, selfish.
That's John Gosselin delivering a scathing description of his former wife, Kate, after a decade-long gag order imposed when he left the show in 2009 was finally lifted this year.
Kate wanted the gag order on me because she didn't want me speaking the truth.
That truth, according to John, is that their reality show, contrary to its cheery public image, was actually harmful to their children, were being robbed of
their
childhood.
Then why did you do it, John?
Like going to the beach and doing a shoot? And saying, there's the water, run in there. Okay, shoot over. Let's go.
Yeah, well, you were doing it.
Who
you
does
were part
that?
Of it.
Yeah, you could
dick.
Stop them.
John says he wanted the kids to have a normal existence.
Then why'd you do the show?
With Kate grew more distant.
Hello!
He finally decided to quit the show when Kate filed for divorce.
The demise of your parents' marriage. Who wants that documented for the world?
Yeah, well, you documented
the kids
it. You were part of it, you
important,
idiot.
But John says they weren't all interested
what
in staying on
dork.
TV either.
She said they all wanted to film. That's not the truth. They all said they have to film, which is a huge difference.
Why did they have to film?
Yeah, well, you
they had to film
John
when you were
simply
on.
To keep Kate living the luxurious lifestyle she'd gotten used to.
Kate is all controlling. It's all about power, control, fame, and money.
John says leaving the show left him a marked man.
It was a smear campaign. What? I absolutely think the network wanted me to be the most hated person in TV or America.
Yeah.
But John says what Kate was doing to the kids was far worse. It was emotional abuse.
Whoa. I call it abuse because it's not kind.
Two of the couple
went
to college while four still live with Kate.
He has
Son
no
Colin
custody.
And daughter Hannah now live with John.
She's abusive and he has no custody.
He has custody of two of the kids.
He has two, but I mean the other six he has no contact.
And didn't want to be on TV.
Kate sent him away. Branding and marketing were her reasons. He did not fit the brand. He didn't want to film. So you send him away with kids that have mental health issues and have been physically and sexually abused. You pluck him from his siblings, whom
sexually
he loves,
abused by
and
who?
You put him into a facility.
Well, he knows something
now
no one
he
else
has
knows.
To fend for himself.
What?
And then you don't go visit him. And then you don't tell his father where he is.
No.
John says Kate sent Colin to a child and adolescent behavioral
know,
unit in
really
Philadelphia
red.
With no diagnosed medical condition other than common ADHD.
I thought he said he was sexually abused.
Zero. He said they put him in a place with other sexually abused.
A crime you've never committed because you didn't want to deal with him. It's disgusting, and it's punishable. The truth is coming out, honey. Karma, karma, karma.
Ooh.
John tells Daily Mail TV it took him more than 3 years to find his son and
it's
get him home.
A powerful piece.
In all that time, he claims Kate only visited Colin three times.
What?
Spending less than a total of 2 hours with her son. It was only thanks to Colin's older roommate at the institution that John was able to rescue his boy.
Through a kid who smuggled a note out for my son who wrote it with a crayon on the back of a coloring book.
What?
Daddy, I love you. I miss you. I went out of here.
It's like a spy thriller.
John
it's
says
like
Kate
against the law or
other
something.
Kids against him. And he believes, like Colin, the rest of his kids suffer from PTSD because of all they've been through.
I know my children have suffered abuse, and I know one day they're going to tell their own story, and America will listen.
America!
America will
you
listen.
Like, shut up. Everything this woman says is a lie.
Can you really take a child with ADHD and put him in with sexually abused children and have them locked up? He says in cages.
And
then only visit him three times.
So this kid was in a cage for 3 years and he had nothing wrong with him but ADHD.
According to Gosselin.
Stay tuned for more in 2017.
Sounds a little hard to believe. Is that possible?
Well, you gotta
a cage?
You gotta take John Gosselin at his word.
Yeah, they had the note, by the way. They had a picture of it in the Daily Mail.
I know. I saw it. Terrible handwriting.
Sure.
Just saying.
Whatever.
That's your sister Shell thought.
You know what I would like to know? It seems that, remember when John was living all high in the hog?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was like staying in these swanky hotels in Europe and
you know, burning
drinking champagne everywhere and just hustling chicks like crazy because he was single for the first time.
Yeah.
And Kate, of course, had that big house and all that. Mm. Well, when children are on TV shows, they're supposed to get a percentage put away for them, which they
there's
get
no way.
When they're 18. Now, with eight kids, you'd think they'd have a lot of money set aside.
Unlikely. There's no way.
It doesn't have to be in a trust.
Here's his kid.
We want our money back, buttholes.
Well, John doesn't have any money. We know that.
Two of them are in college, so.
John was blowing money out his ass.
No.
Maybe that was Kate Major money. What he got from her.
Oh, she wrote for the Star. I forgot.
That's right, yeah. big money.
Brandon.
He couldn't even hold his laugh in on that one.
Face the show.
No. Wow.
Why does that make him so happy?
I don't know. It sounds like he ripped his pants.
It's really funny. After the show, he's working on the audio portion and typing notes. I'll just hear him laugh. I'm like, what are you laughing at? And sure enough, it's his farts. He's going back to listen to his farts.
Sorry, guys.
No, you're not.
Ah, oh, shit.
Huge sorry, not sorry.
Such a liar.
I'm embarrassed.
Embarrassed, yeah. didn't you say people come up to Kristen at work and go, did you hear Brandon's fart? Is that what you said? Then you said that.
Well, I know there's a lot of people she works with that listen to the show.
Does Kristen act shocked?
She goes, oh, I have to hear him at home.
Well, I had that whole montage that one week, and I had Kristen listen to it, and she wasn't
proud?
As proud of it as I thought she'd
what?
Be.
What? You're kidding.
I'm shocked. Oh.
Well, but she knows how often you fart because you can't control your farts, so she has to hear them too. It's not like they can only happen here.
I kind of do the same thing. I just stare off to the TV.
Does Maddie laugh?
She loves them.
Oh, loves them.
Little
wow.
kids do love
them. She farts more than I do.
Yeah.
Of course she does.
She gets a good giggle.
Annie can impersonate him now. If you ask her what Daddy's farts sound like, she goes, it's the weirdest thing. I don't know what we're teaching that nut.
She's by far going to be the...
She's insane.
Like,
she's going to be trouble.
She's the comedian daughter, and
and
Charlotte is the straight and narrow.
Serious, yeah.
And Maddie is also... You know, the comedian daughters will have to get together.
Annie.
I wouldn't do that to Maddie.
Charlotte.
So, I am like... I'm so stunned by this Ed Buck story.
Yeah.
Ed Buck, who's this great donor to the Democratic Party, and you know, he's held positions of campaign. He's more of a campaign guy.
He just gives a shitload of money for connections. He's kind of like Epstein light.
How does he have money though? Where did he originally?
I'm not sure how he has money, but he not only
I was from Steubenville, Ohio. Oh, my God.
He supposedly does have a lot of money. That's where Jimmy the Greek was from. Steubenville, wasn't it?
Steubenville.
Oh, that's where that rape...
Run,
red, run.
Oh, some great things
rape.
Happened there.
Yeah, what are they turning out? What's in the water at Steubenville?
Apparently, Ed Buck has no interest in any kind of sexual activity unless it's a black homeless person on meth.
With that, didn't he like Long John underwear too? Wasn't that a big part of it?
Well,
he
did dress them up a certain way. He has some weird fetishes apparently, but if it's not a homeless black man on meth, he cannot get excited.
Trudy, I was saying to Drew earlier, the thing I don't understand about this Ed Buck is he really dodged a big bullet last time when the second black man died.
Oh, right.
The second black homeless man on meth.
Overdosed, yeah.
Well, he wasn't homeless, was he?
They're always homeless, aren't they?
I thought they were always down on their... I don't know. I don't remember. Anyway, yeah, let's say homeless. If that was you, wouldn't you stop doing what you were doing because
immediately.
It was too close of a call?
Immediately.
But Drew, you had a good point.
Well, I think that people are emboldened when they get away with stuff. It just seems like, look at the people that just keep doing it. Like Michael Jackson, every time he got off, you'd see him with another 12-year-old kid, you know, dressed just like him on tour. And, you know, he's staying with me. His parents,
like,
they're
oh my
nine
God.
Miles away.
Right.
But no one ever died.
No, but he was charged. I mean, he was charged. He paid a kid $23 million, and he took another 12-year-old out on tour with him like 6 months later. Ugh. I mean, that's, you think, $23 million is too much. I don't want any children around for any reason. I'm done with my childhood.
I'm done with my childhood.
I'm done with my adult childhood. But no, he takes another kid out who he's accused of molesting, and I don't know if they paid that kid off, or maybe that was Safe Chuck. That was out with him.
I think it was.
Yeah.
And Wade. I think he took Wade out with him too, didn't he? Because Wade was a little dancer.
Yeah,
he was in the show.
Yeah, he took him on tour. Yeah,
which by the way was so lame. If I was at that show, I'd be like, get the fucking kid off.
Oh my god!
If you were Michael Jackson,
if you were in school with that kid, wouldn't you have been ragging on him?
Hell yes.
You're on stage with Jackson, you weirdo. Why are you dressing like him?
I always feel after the fact, if something, you know, like I've done something like that, then like for years I nurture guilt about it. And I'm like, oh, phew, I got away with it. I cannot believe the hubris. It probably dumb things. No interest to anybody.
No, any normal person that does something that stupid when they're having sex with black homeless people on meth and actually they overdose them.
Well, he shoots them up.
Yeah, he shoots them up. You go, oh, my God, no more black homeless guys on meth. Forget it. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. And I'm not shooting anyone up.
Maybe they shoot themselves up or they come
high
on meth.
I'm only having sex with homeless guys that aren't on drugs from now on.
Or maybe a guy who's not homeless.
Or I'm going to have them be actors that can pretend they're on meth.
Homeless
black actors who can pretend they're on meth.
Oh, a narrow category. Is there a dating service for that?
Yeah.
Oh.
So anyway, this guy overdosed, but he didn't die.
Yeah, so that's why they could arrest him, right?
What's the deal? They had all these protesters at the apartment complex, mm-hmm. which was, and all the neighbors supported the protesters. Remember we talked to that one lady?
Yeah.
And what does she have to say? They do nothing. They're like, oh, okay, well, don't do it anymore.
Isn't that a typical story of something being really huge for a week and then the weekend comes and no one cares on Monday?
Yeah, homeless black guys on meth are just in his apartment then, 2 days later and nobody cares.
Here comes the weekend by Monday. Let's find a new story.
Why is he never charged with any sort of drug charges?
He is now, right?
But why didn't they do that when he killed the last guy?
Because they couldn't prove that they were his drugs, I suppose, because they were dead.
But aren't they? If they're in your house, I mean, from watching Cops, if they're in your car, they're yours, right?
It just seemed like with two dead homeless black guys on meth in his place and a reputation for injecting, because there were other homeless black guys who said, yeah, I went up there to party with him and he injected me with meth and, you know, wild sex.
Who's a jury going to believe, a homeless black guy on meth or Ed Buck, donor to Democratic Party? 11 homeless black guys on meth,
I think the jury goes, wow, 11 homeless black guys on meth. Would 11 homeless black guys on meth all lie and say the same thing independently?
Yeah, but this guy donated a ton of money.
Oh, by the way, yes.
I'm sure he has great lawyers.
And they shuffle the cards, you know, on Good Morning America, all the people he's donated money to, and there's Hillary Clinton. Smile on her face, a shitty grin of hers. You know, her Jeffrey Epstein and Ed Buck. and just rogues gallery of money that she dipped into. Jeez.
Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell at Chelsea's wedding.
God. Oh, yeah.
Such a weird story.
So what's Antonio Brown? The only news today is that this last the assault case, the girl was seeking a civil case. He cannot be charged in that because of the statute of limitations.
Was it Allegheny County, Pittsburgh area that was looking into it? Remember, you said they were looking into it.
Yeah, but they were. They said they were.
They can't. No charges because of the statute of limitations.
Why is there statute of limitations on sexual assault? Rape?
Is that the rape or is that the sexual assault? One was in Florida, one was in Pittsburgh. I can't keep Antonio Brown's misconduct straight.
She said she was raped.
Yeah, where though?
At his house.
In Miami or
I think it was in Pennsylvania.
Well, that would be the one then. I would think there wouldn't be that short because it was only 2 years ago. The rape must have been in Miami. Had to have been, true.
Wow, I don't know. Yeah, that's right, because he was just training her. He was an all-pro before anything happened, before he jacked on her.
Ugh. Let's see if I can find the story.
And did the NFL ever say anything about their meeting with her? Supposedly she met with him for 10 hours. Oh, what do you talk about for 10 hours?
Ugh. Antonio Brown's junk. Oh, his fart.
Oh, boy.
And, Would you? What's going on over there?
It's Antonio Brown.
Oh, that's right.
Fake.
I wasn't even cognizant of why the farts were happening. It was just that they were.
Yeah, it was sexual assault allegations in Pennsylvania.
Are they more stringent than Florida?
Well, I just to the statute.
It's Florida, Shirley.
Flo Rida.
Come on.
I like Flo Rida better.
This is the most ridiculous name. Flo Rida.
Florida sucks.
I know. Flo Rida didn't really put much thought into his rap name, did he?
When
he
came no.
The first time
Where
I heard it.
Where am I from? Florida.
I heard it. It was Rida. So ridiculous. I didn't even know that it was a takeoff on Florida. I had no
oh, really?
Idea. Like, Flo Rida.
No
what the hell
used,
was that?
How come no one's used Mish Igan?
That's
probably
a great
name.
Will.
I like it.
Mish I period.
I like it.
Gan. Mish Igan.
So what was the Colin Kaepernick news today?
Oh,
Martin Luther King III wants people to boycott the NFL until he's somebody's quarterback.
Yeah, that'll happen.
I know.
This
story is really
this is like
about...
the best one of the best football seasons I've ever seen in the first 2 weeks. There have been more exciting games.
It really has been. Hasn't
Nobody
it?
Is going to boycott the NFL right now.
How about the fact that the story is just really about Martin Luther King III saying, "Hey, I'm still a person.
I know.
Look at me."
You know, it's funny because when I saw the story, I was like, wait, which Martin Luther King is this? Is this the grandson? Is this the son? Is this a nephew? Who is this
is
guy?
Is it Joel Loving?
I know. It's
someone
confusing.
Someone who changed their name. I don't know.
So Kaepernick's agent has reached out to three different teams and said he will be he is willing to be a backup. So
he's willing
that?
To be a backup?
Well, because before he kept saying, like early on, he kept saying, I want to start. I want $20 million.
Wait.
Well, you know why?
Why would
you know
he call
why
that shot? This is like the Super Bowl halftime. Like, nobody plays Super Bowl halftime without my permission. Who does he think he is? Not that good. If he was that good, he'd be signed like Antonio Brown. Anybody would sign Antonio Brown.
Isn't it really easy to be the backup to, say, Mason Rudolph in Pittsburgh, or the backup to Gardner Minshew in Jacksonville, or the backup to
the Jets.
Whatever the Jets are on now?
Falk.
I mean, because he could easily beat out those three. I'm sure he's thinking that.
Source close to Kaepernick, in light of all
but
the quarterback
injuries.
He hasn't
played in 2 years. More than 2 years.
Says Colin is literally in the best shape of his life. He's been working out 5 days a week at 5 a.m. for 3 years.
I think that person might be biased.
He wants to play again.
I'm at the point now where I want someone to sign him because I'm tired of hearing every time a quarterback gets hurt that someone has to sign him.
Well, if he gets signed, I want one of two things to happen. I want him to be... I want him to play no matter what, and I want him to be either really bad or I'm going to be really good. Yeah, so these sides could be so angry at each other, right?
It would be interesting if he signed, because people would be rooting so hard for him and against him at the same time.
It would be very exciting. I omit it.
But
very interesting.
There's a lot of things about this whole story that I'm just really tired of. One, like, Colin doesn't have a job yet. So Jay-Z can't take a job, and they can't play halftime. Colin just said they couldn't. Colin didn't get their. He didn't get permission from Colin. It's like, why is he all of a sudden have to be asked for permission to do anything? And by the way, he does have a job because he won a huge lawsuit with the NFL. He won a lot of money, and he has a Nike endorsement. This guy's made a lot of money. It's not like he's jobless, like he's homeless.
His ad
he's working. I'm homeless and I'm working out at 5 in the morning.
His I'm going by Ed Buck's house. Didn't he win a Grammy too last week for that ad, for that commercial?
Oh yes, he did. He won, was it an Emmy or
Emmy?
Emmy?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think he did win something. Yeah, so it's not like nothing is going on for this guy. But people act like, oh my God, poor Colin.
But isn't that weird? No one will sign him.
He's worth $40 million.
Well, it's so weird now, or at least bring him in to try him out.
I think if he was a better quarterback, if he was Tom Brady and he had all that baggage, somebody would sign him.
You don't think he's a better quarterback than some of the guys out there? Than anybody on the Jets that can play right now?
Well, the Jets is ridiculous. They're in their third string quarterback.
That's also a market that would probably accept him. Because it's New York.
I think anywhere he plays, it's going to be a distraction.
Yeah, well, that's clearly why he hasn't been signed.
If he's going to start somewhere, that's probably the only way. That would probably be the best way to sign him, because then, you know, if the team wins, the fans are going to get behind him. They're not going to give a shit.
Yeah, I think so. Does anybody contact Fireman Ed from the Jets?
The super fan?
Yeah.
I don't know.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountains?
Actual audio of Kaepernick. That was at 5 o'clock this morning.
Bucks out.
You want to get us out of here, Brandon? And I want to thank Steve Gorman.
He's great.
Yeah, it's a really interesting book. If you like reading these kind of books, I was trying to debate, like, is this guy the worst lead singer a-hole? I mean, the combination of the brothers is just a disaster, but Chris Robinson is really difficult. Oh my God.
He's got to be up there.
He's way up there. I have to say, Peter Hook in New Order just could not stop talking about Bernard Sumner and what an asshole he was. He hates him so much. He called him a cunt about 500 times in the book. I swear to God. But, you know, the Aerosmith guys, Steven Tyler hasn't always been that easy to deal with. And
he's amusing, though.
He is.
Very amusing.
He has his likable side.
And he doesn't mind being famous. I mean, that's the weird thing about Robinson.
The list of people.
He has a shit on everything. I don't see Steven Tyler shitting on everything.
No.
One of the big complaints about Chris Robinson is that he acts like he's such a populist, like, you know, no endorsements, and ZZ Top has his fucking beer sponsor, and, you know, and our music's unsponsored. He wanted to put this, oh my God, I gotta find this, it's so dumb. He wanted to put a sticker on Southern Harmony Companion whatever. What's it called again?
Yeah, that one. Oh, I know.
He wanted to put a sticker on it that there was, like, no apathy contained within, or some stupid sticker like
that's
that.
Dumb.
Shut up.
No.
So trite.
Anyway, he basically makes it he takes the money every time. He's not nearly as principled. I mean, has no principles when it comes to money.
He wanted all the money from the band.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He's so deep.
No, he's not that guy.
Dweller H.
One, two, three, four.
Sounds like a number one hit tune, all right.